WPFW office at 202-588-0999, extension 344. And if you want, you can ask to sit at my table. I'd love to meet each and every one of you and give all of you the inside scoop. For more on the inside scoop, check out the Head On Radio Network or radioinsidescoop.com, www.radioinsidescoop.com. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown says that Allied forces are winning the battle against insurgents in Afghanistan. Brown also maintains that no negotiations will be held with Taliban leaders, that they will be, quote, isolated and eliminated instead. Britain is also adding an additional £450 million for military equipment and development. That's equivalent to nearly $1 billion U.S. dollars. Former CIA directors George Tenet and Porter Goss will testify in a congressional probe focused on destruction of interrogation videotapes of terror suspects. The two men have become key figures in an expanding investigation into the possible cover-up of harsh interrogation techniques described by some as torture. Meanwhile, current CIA director Michael Hayden says he had limited knowledge in the matter, but that his agency could have done a much better job in keeping Congress informed about how the tapes were handled. The first formal peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians in 7 years began today, but reportedly did not go well. The two sides traded barbs and accusations in today's...
And the world cannot read. Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
The federal budget deficit for last month jumped sharply as compared to 1 year ago, much of the increase being blamed on the calendar. Benefit payments that would have been made on December 1st were made early, before the weekend. That kept an estimated $17 billion on the November budget book. Meantime, the U.S. trade deficit increased to its highest level in 3 months as record oil prices and Chinese imports underlined a solid gain in American exports. The U.S. Commerce Department reports that the deficit for October rose to $57.8 billion. That's the highest level since July. Today, top banks worldwide announced an emergency injection of cash into short-term funding markets. Involved are the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, and the Swiss National Bank. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan says the subprime mortgage crisis was, quote, an accident waiting to happen, unquote. In today's Wall Street Journal, Greenspan conceded that low U.S. interest rates set during his tenure may have contributed. contributed to today's bubble in current real estate prices. Light sweet crude oil trading at $94.39 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 41 points to end at 13,473, the NASDAQ up 18 points, the S&P 500 up 9. And there's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Midweek already, and since we've been without Peter Godbolt for a couple of days, I'll have to remind you that you must do your part in the war on Christmas. It is the 12th day of December. That means there's only 12 more days to go out and kill a tree. As Peter says, I'm tired of the protracted war. I want to see us finish this thing once and for all. And just as a programming note, Peter will not be live on the air this evening. As a matter of fact, he is still swamped. I don't even want to think about, my God, he must have asbestos boots on from the fires he's been stomping out. But at any rate, we will have a best of program. You can check the webpage at headonradionetwork.com. Susan, our news ninja, is getting that prepared so you'll know exactly which show it was. So we hope to have all the fires put out down there that Peter's having to deal with and have him back on the air, hopefully tomorrow evening. But between now and then, it's worth reminding you that this isn't just any old head-on program. It's Wednesday, and you know what Wednesday means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Hallelujah and ramen. We certainly are, because it's prayer meeting here on Head On, our weekly look at the excesses and ignorances and generalized hatefulness of the religion industry in America. And just to shake things up a little bit, I want to start with something a little bit different, because I want to go outside the bounds of America as we examine the effects of religious fundamentalism. And this time, thanks to a link sent along by our good friend Robert in Akita, Kyushu, Japan, we have this headline. Christian missionary spreads the word and legs of 14-year-old girl. And it's the story of a Nagoya Christian messenger by the name of Hachiro Miyazumi. He's 29 years old, Hachiro Miyazumi is. And he's a missionary with the Japan Church of Christ. He was arrested last month for breaking the child welfare law by performing indecent acts with a 14-year-old girl by the name of Shukan Shincho. Yeah, the fundamentalism hard at work here. It involves Mr. Miyazumi getting on the bullet train He apparently lives a considerable distance. He lives in, let me see here. I saw, he traveled by bullet train from Nagoya, what the story says, all the way to Yokohama. There's a song out there, Yokohama Mama or something like that, isn't there? Have I heard that somewhere along the way? He traveled from Nagoya to Yokohama to meet the little schoolgirl. And they checked into something that is referred to apparently in Japan as a love hotel. You know, there are many things about the Japanese language that is much more elegant than what we have to offer in English. Love hotel being one of them, because all we'd call it is a flop house. You know, one of those where you rent the hotel room by the hour. So they have sex in the love hotel. Then they spend the night together. And then as he was about to leave, this man of God, the girl tells him that she has nowhere to go. So as the newspaper story puts it, he did the Christian thing and took her back to Nagoya on the bullet train with him. Gets her back to his one-room apartment, and they practice the missionary position again. The police say that he had sex with her three times, once at the Love Hotel and other times at his home. The little girl's mom was having an absolute fit by this point in time. Finally got her on the cell phone and convinced her to come home, so the man takes her back home and spends 3 days at her place. Wow. I mean, talk about casting your bread upon the waters. Woohoo! Now, here's the best part. Being a Christian... Now, this was all set up as more or less prostitution transaction. This is the best part. He never paid her. I hesitate to use this phrase. He stiffed her. That's right. I guess he just, there's the story about, let's see, how does this go? A guy walks into a barber shop and gets a haircut, and the guy who's a cop says, how much do I owe you? And he says, nothing, you know, you're engaged in public service, this one's on me. So the barber comes to work the next morning, and there's a box of donuts on his doorstep. So he's cutting hair later that day, and a firefighter comes in. And he cuts his hair. Firefighter says, what do I owe you? And he says, nothing. You save a lot of people, and this is the least that I can do to thank you for what you do. So the guy smiles, goes away. Barber comes back to... work the next morning, and there's a nice little smoke alarm on his doorstep waiting for him. So that day he's cutting hair, and a preacher comes in, cuts his hair. Guy says, how much do I owe you? Preacher says, he tells the preacher, you're a man of the cloth, you don't owe me anything. So the guy smiles, comes back. Barber comes into work the next morning, there's a dozen preachers standing on his doorstep. Sorry, couldn't resist. And yeah, I say it here, it comes out there, email has already blasted in. Yokohama Mama would be from that famous Cajun guitar player, Sonny Landreth. I knew it. I didn't know who, but I knew. So, that's where we start. You know, just because the Christian fundamentalists over here are sick and twisted and prone to rape, mayhem, and murder and all manner of fraud, don't think that the same doesn't apply outside the territorial confines of the United States. The newspaper article notes Protestant clergy members like Mayazumi are permitted to marry, but they're not supposed to play around out of wedlock, and especially not with 14-year-old girls. I guess a reference like that might be necessary in a Japanese newspaper where you might think that, given the behavior of Christian missionaries over the centuries, that, you know, maybe they're supposed to, that it's some sort of holy religious vow that they have to diddle children. But no, they're not. Miyazumi had studied theology at Seowa College in Kobe and then at Posh Doshisha University in Kyoto. Wow, if you studied religion in Kyoto, that ought to mean something, but I think you got the wrong one. Not the wrong Kyoto, the wrong religion. He was posted to his current post in Nagoya in April 2005. Story says he's about 170 centimeters tall and really fat. He loves fried foods and curried noodles and fried chicken on rice. Even when he orders regular noodles, he always gets the biggest possible serving. The proprietor of a restaurant the missionary frequented said he'd sit there scarfing away while reading kids' manga. His daddy says, I haven't confirmed exactly what went on, so it's not my place to comment. All I can do at the moment is believe what the son I have raised is saying. Of course, as is always the case with the parishioners who don't want to believe the ugly truth, one says, it's a matter of a broken heart. So, you know, don't think that this is just a disease that America suffers from. Everywhere that we have sent this disease, the suffering has continued. Miyazumi apparently said he doesn't get on that well with other adults, according to a newspaper reporter. He seems to get on better with kids in junior high or high school. Ew! Just ew! So, you know, I mean, I don't want anybody thinking that I'm biased against the American religion industry. You know, pretty much, with very few exceptions, whitherever the religion industry goes, the sickness and the hurt and the pain goes along with it. And so, Mr. Miyazumi, this one's for you. Maybe. God, this drives me crazy sometimes. There we go.
Sitting in a tiny table in a ritzy restaurant,
eating noodles.
She was staring at her coffee cup. He was trying to keep his courage up by applying blues. Talk was small and they talked at all. They both knew what they wanted.
He wanted more noodles.
There was no need to talk about it. They were bold enough to scope it out.
But she wasn't.
Keep it loose. She said, you don't look like my type, but I guess you'll do.
Can I come home with you?
Third-rate romance, low-rent rendezvous.
He said, I'll even tell you that I love you if you want me to.
Or the bullet train, as the case may be.
He
he drove to the family inn. She didn't even have to pretend she didn't know what for.
Especially considering they call them love hotels over there.
Then he went to the desk and made his request while she waited outside.
We need about a half an hour.
And he came back with the key. And she said, give it to me and I'll unlock the door.
Because I don't want you locking me in.
She kept saying, I've never really done this kind of thing before.
And she meant it.
First rate romance, no rendezvous.
And he said, yes, I have, but only a time or two.
And she was only two.
First rate romance, no rendezvous.
You know, most people, it's usually love. But, you know, when it comes to the religion industry, it's usually rape. Let's go straight to the phones to the person who put me on to the saga of Mr. Miyazumi. Robert is calling from Japan. Hey, Robert, thanks for calling. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I thought you might enjoy that one.
You know, it just made my night.
Made my morning. But, you know, this is a thing that I see in the papers almost every single week, at least. Maybe not with the priest or the, but it's with teachers or coaches or something. It's almost every single week. It's usually with, cameras poking up under the skirt or something. And, with the,
Is it because of the repressiveness of the society? I mean, is that a common factor we can find, the puritanical impulses of American religion industry fundamentalists and the sort of repressive nature of traditional Japanese society? Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's they haven't been trained by their parents to learn how to date, how to ask, you know. In fact, I mean, I have secretaries who have never gone on a date, and they're like 28, 27 years old. In fact, one-third of all women in Japan that are in their 30s are still single. So, I mean, and compare that with my dad, who was pushing me to go on a date when I was 13 years old, and I did. So I guess, you know, he felt, okay, it's okay, he's normal, you know, there'll be children later on, I suppose, but I was pushed into it, you know, and happily I had no problem with that. But with Japanese, it's not on the radar, and so what happens is the girls will do two things. They may start having love affairs secretly, and there's no discussion, and there's accidents, and so we have one of the highest abortion rates in the world. In fact, Fukuoka is the highest.
Because that's another thing we don't talk about, you know.
We don't talk about it, right? And or the other option is, like with this girl, they get into prostitution to make some extra money. So they make about $3,000 a month doing that. But, you know, their mothers are thinking they're going off to juku, maybe tutoring schools, or they're off with their friends, and the parents are often working 16-hour days. And so a lot of this is because of the way the companies treat their workers, and so the parents have no time to bond with their children, and so the children also are learning the consumer, you know, consumerism is everything, and so I need more crap, and I don't have enough crap, so how do I get the crap? And so they end up doing this.
And I got to have the money to buy the crap.
To buy the crap, right.
So I can treat my body like crap so I can get more, yeah.
Right.
Got it.
Right. And so Tokyo has one of the highest rates of sexual diseases, you know.
I can only imagine, for instance, because it's not very, every so often, it's not a big interval between them, you get a news story out there about some Marine committing a rape or some sailor on shore leave committing a rape. That sort of clash of the cultures, it seems like it's almost a perfect sexual storm, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we create, I mean, with the bases, we have 50,000 soldiers here in Japan. And these people are, you know, macho. It's a macho culture that they're bred in. It's a violent culture. They're trained to be violent people, to kill people. And then on Saturday or Sunday or whatever, they're released into the population and told, okay, be good boys now. don't harm anybody. And it's such a huge disconnect because, you know, you're going to have 10%, 5% that are not going to do that, and they're going to push the limits. And so, yeah, it's when a ship, Air Force carrier comes into port, it's just a plume of crimes that are spread out until the damn ship leaves. And it's kind of covered up because, you know, nobody, you know, wants to hear about it. So.
Yeah, because we might nuke them again.
Right, right.
Well, so, no, I'm sorry, that was probably uncalled for, but, you know, I don't... I've got, you know, again, I guess what some would deem to be really weird ideas about sex, and that is that since it's something that is about as innately human as any one activity can be, that people should be taught about it. I mean, and the study should be made of it. And I mean, I that's why I think, what is it, tantric sex that's talked about in the Indian subcontinent and such cultures, where you you treat it like the art that it is. And yet you take these repressive cultures, and I include, my God, I can't imagine, that you wouldn't include Japan in that category. And you take one repressive culture and you put you rub it up against another repressive culture, and you're going to have weird repressive sex. Who's surprised?
Yeah. Well, I mean, with my secretaries, I tell them, you know, they're all lonely, they're all desperate, but they've all been trapped into this mindset that they can't initiate conversation, or they cannot ask a man out for a date, you know, because they've been trained. I mean, culture is almost like a form of brainwashing in a way.
Because that's the only part of the culture they've apparently gotten. I mean, I did some, you know, not extended, certainly not a degree's worth, but a good bit, because it just really grabbed me and moved me. Not that kind of grabbing and moving. but no, I studied a bunch of Japanese poetry and Japanese literature in college, and you know, I was just taken with it, and just stunned by the absolute beauty of it. And, you know, to the point that I thought, you know, gosh, I wish I had another 4 years in college to just major in Japanese and just absorb all of this in its own language. I had good friends who were the students who had come from Japan to study at WVU, and they were so glad to see somebody who actually was interested, and they told me some of the same things. You know, they said, you know, don't be fooled, because this beautiful stuff that you're reading doesn't go on anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I told you about the book. I'm still reading it. It's called Lost Japan by Alex Kerr, K-E-R-R. And, you know, it talks about, you know, the slow destruction of Japanese culture. And I'm actually writing a textbook now called, you know, Explain It, basically Japanese culture for my second-year students. Part of it to explain Japanese culture. And so, you know, like, different kinds of, you know, handicrafts, art, music, so that when they go to America and the American students are asking me about Japanese culture, they're not sitting going, I don't know. It's kind of, I guess it's not such an unusual thing. I guess if you were to ask an American student about famous American artist, they'll probably be going, specific questions about Japanese American history, they might be pushed, you know. And so it's not such a crazy book to write, actually. But there's so much about Japanese culture that the Japanese don't know. It's because they're in the country. They don't think about it, and so they think they know it, but they actually don't. But one of the nasty aspects about Japanese culture is that it is a repressive society. The individual is repressed. Alex Kira writes, it's a culture of incredible depth, that the individuals remain shallow, whereas Western society, the individual is often very deep, and the individual is, you know, very complex, but the culture is very shallow. So, I tell my secretaries, you know, go out and start initiating, you know, I give them hunting lessons, you know. Because I tell them about, you know, the secretary that my second year up in Fukui Prefecture that was very, very beautiful, very beautiful. And then my boss, who I later saw a couple of years ago, said, oh, yeah, I ended up having sex with her. She was still single, and she was so, you know. And he was 50 years old and married and stuff like that. But, I say, look, this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to sit there, wait, and then when you're about 37 years old, you're going to end up having sex with people that you really don't want, but just, you know, you're going to do it because you're so lonely and miserable. And this woman, if she had just, you know, taken some time off and, you know, gone out and asked people, because I remember teaching an engineer from NEC, a famous Japanese company that in at that class, and I said, why don't you, during the break, why don't you go talk to him? And he was like a Mr. Japan. I mean, they couldn't do it. Just you know, like, let's, simple conversation. They could not initiate simple conversation.
Yeah, like Charlie Brown trying to talk to the little redheaded girl.
Yeah, exactly. Or much less, or let's go have coffee or something like that. I mean, just simple stuff like that, you know. But they couldn't do it. And so they're trapped in this passive mode where they're waiting for anybody to talk, you know, to ask them out. And then the ones that do, they don't like. And so you have 30% of the women in Japan that are still single in their 30s. And once you're beyond 28, there's a name for you called Christmas cake. And Christmas cake is a term that, it's a derogatory that, it's day after your, it's Christmas cake that's sold after Christmas and nobody wants. So there's this clock. I mean, at 28, and then if you're 30, my God. And then.
God, this sounds like something out of Arkansas, Robert. I mean.
Yeah.
You know, she's 16 and she ain't married. Poor thing's going to be a spinster all her life.
That's right. And then she ends up getting, you know, married to people that she doesn't really like. And so it's just a misery. So that's one of the, every culture's got its good points and every culture has its bad points. And so,
well, sure it does. And it's very interesting because, you know, we've spent considerable time talking about the repressive nature of cultures that make women walk around in beekeeper suits and things like that.
Yeah.
At the other end of the spectrum, I mean, here is an incredibly cosmopolitan culture, a consumer culture of, you know, in many ways you would almost say it's more like it's 22nd century consumer culture because the rest of the world is so far behind the consumerism of the Japanese. And yet, at the end of the day, here are men and women who are achingly alone and absolutely unable to say so much as, hi, how are you, to one another. By virtue of the strictures, not of 22nd century consumer culture, but of, 13th century tribal village code. Does that make sense?
And then part of it is that, you know, the man has to be smarter or has to be better than the woman. And so women that have, that are intelligent or equal status, they can't get married, you know. So, for example, women doctors here, they're at the highest level in Japan, and so they're almost all single because the only other person that can actually marry them is another doctor, but then that male doctor doesn't want someone that's equal to him.
Robert, honest to God, hearing things like this gives me the blind shivers for the future of humanity. It does.
Right, and professors too that had, you know, had the same problem too. I mean, women professors. I mean,
have you? I realize you've got a real life and you don't just sit around all the time consuming media or anything. But I've been on this from time to time. I mention this little film. Have you seen Idiocracy?
No, not yet. I haven't seen it.
It's a must, Robert, because if only for the first 5 minutes of the film, where you see the upward, and of course these are it's an American couple, but it sounds like you could translate every last bit of it into Japanese and have it make perfect sense, because it opens, and I don't want to give anything away, but it opens on the one hand with this upwardly mobile, highly educated, upper middle class couple who are looking into the camera and saying, well, you know, we want to have children, but we can't have children right now because, well, you know, look at the way the economy is. And, you know, under those circumstances, bringing a child into this world would just be unfair. And so it goes on like that. And then on the other side of the screen with sort of a split screen effect, you've got Bubba. Running out the front door, saying, I didn't do nothing with her. And there's, you know, 14 children running around in the yard already. And the thesis is that the intelligent people are basically getting the world swamped with idiots to our own future detriment. I mean, the movie is clearly set 500 years in the future, but you watch it and you realize that's the only way he could do it, because the fact of the matter is that future is now.
Well, you go to the Philippines, and you got Filipino men that haven't held down one job and do nothing but cockfighting. And I'm not playing about their own cocks either.
No. Somebody else's.
Gambling and producing child after child after child after child. I mean, I got my wife is Filipino, Filipino American now, but her older sister's got 10 children. Her youngest sister had just 5. And it's kind of like he pokes and then they expect me to pay, you know.
Yeah.
Jesus. He pokes and I pay. He pokes and I pay. They're eating dirt. You know, they're all scrambling after my wife's mother's pension money, and they're not holding down a single job, and it's endless misery. But they can't stop the poking. You know, they don't have the synapses and the common sense.
But again, turning our conversation back to religion, since it is prayer meeting night. There's also a substantial Catholic population in the Philippines that says, you know, thou shalt as often as possible, and every time you do, there must be a baby.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the issues there. I mean, that's why, you know, the Philippines is a swamp of misery and poverty and corruption, and here come to agnostic, atheistic Japan, and it's the exact opposite, where people are actually thinking, well, you know, because I got colleagues that are, you know, professors, and they haven't produced a child yet because they just haven't got quite enough money, or they don't feel quite right, and we're losing population. So I think, 2 years ago or last year, we actually lost population. So, and there's incentives. I mean, some cities up in northern Japan are offering $10,000 for anyone to have a child because they're that desperate. We've actually closed a couple schools here because there's just not enough children to keep that particular school, and, you know, so it's a real contrast.
It's amazing. I mean, I don't know how Japan supports the population that it carries, because I've got a typical, probably Western view of it, that it's just one long urban sprawl from the northern island all the way down to the end of the southern one. But
No.
There's countryside. There's
yeah. No, I mean, like I said, I mean, I was able to leave the city limits of Hiroshima and be in the forest in about 15 minutes. And even here, I can be in the forest in about 15 minutes by car. And the fact that we just took a nice long drive, my wife and I, on Sunday. So, but unfortunately, the forest here is like the culture. It's a monoculture. It's kind of like tree farms. They've wiped out their
biodiversity.
The virgin forest. Yeah, biodiversity, and planted spruces and cedars. And this just goes to show how stupid conservatives are, because they think, oh, spruce and cedar fetches the highest price, and so we'll plant the entire country with spruce and cedar. And so now the price for the lumber is now worthless. So they can't chop
the
trees.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Japanese businessmen come over here to where I live, literally, you know, in this area, to search for Royal Polonia trunks. To take home and sell at astronomical prices there. Beautiful wood, I'm told. That's all entirely by accident.
They could have done that here if they had, you know, 30, 40 years ago, if they had just had some imagination. But, you know, conservatives are just too damn stupid to do that. So.
Well, no, you'll never go broke underestimating the intelligence of a conservative. That's for God knows sure.
Yeah. But just to leave you before I go, with one last prayer meeting thing. One of my part-timers was telling me that he made about $700 over the weekend doing weddings. And what he was is that he is a fake priest.
So oh, man, I have so got to move.
Oh, this is a great story. This is a great story. I say, where did you get your license? And he said, oh, it's from someplace in the city organization or the company organizations up in Sapporo in Hokkaido. And I said, well, what did you do? I said, oh, he said nothing. And so he makes, if you can bend your mind around this, the going rate for this is about $200 for a wedding. So that takes about 30 minutes. And one of my other part-timers before actually worked for a chapel, and it was every 20 minutes he would make about $120. So for an hour is $300.
I'm in the wrong racket.
Ain't bad money.
I'm in the wrong racket.
Oh, yeah. So for like 1 month, he made about $3,000.
And it probably doesn't even have to be decent Latin or anything. I mean, you can Igpe Atinle will do fine under the circumstances.
Well, you see, that's the catch. I mean, you do have to do this in Japanese. They want the foreigners, you know, because the foreigners is, you know, it makes it look real. And but they have to have it in Japanese because they don't understand English.
I'm a quick study.
And then we have these beautiful. Bend your mind around this. Even here in Kitakyushu, we have something that's almost like the Vatican. These fake churches, beautiful places, but they're all company chapels. I mean, they're all where they just do weddings. That's just the only thing that takes place.
Weddings are us, Japanese. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's amazing. It's interesting that you would bring that up because I forget, someone sent along a story last week in the last week about the burgeoning pet rental industry in Japan.
Right.
Was that you? Or?
Well, pets, I mean, your dog will cost you about $1,400.
Well, but you can go and apparently you can go and rent one for a couple of hours and go for a walk in the park and
you
then
can
bring.
Also rent you can also rent grandparents too or young people. So if you're too busy to see your parents in the old folks' home, you can rent some young people to go visit them.
Oh my God. It is. It's 22nd century consumer culture, isn't it? Everything can be had for a price.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a way, I mean, the Americans have what we call babysitters, right? For children. I mean, the parents go off and you hire some 14, 15 year old.
Yeah.
And for Japanese, that would be absolutely unthinkable. Absolutely inconceivable that you would ever leave your child with someone that's not, you know, a relative. And so we have absolutely no babysitters here in this country. In fact, I've never left my children. I mean, I wish I could. I mean, just to take a break, you know, but it's not possible. So for them, you know, it cuts the other way too. So, but
I don't know. I got to get a Berlitz book or something and learn some Japanese wedding rituals or something because, golly, you could pay for the plane fare pretty quick, couldn't you? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm just absolutely
yeah.
all over this. This is a you know, be a cleric, rake in the money, and absolutely feel not bad about it at all because, you know, it's a dummied up transaction from the get-go.
Yeah, and they know, I mean, you're not, the only way you can do it is to actually have to actually be a priest, which you can actually get over a line, or have a permanent residency, and, you know, you can do it that way. But, the whole thing is that they know that you're a fake. Okay, and that's why you're actually called a celebrant. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And they actually know that church is a fake. You know, I mean, but they're all comfortable. They're all happy with that. It's just a show.
It's the appearance.
That's what they want. And
wow.
When you remember when I was a deacon, I was trying to be a deacon.
Oh yeah. Right? I remember that very well.
Yeah. And so I got out of it because, you know, they didn't give me instructions. They didn't give me any feedback. And then they said, one more year. I said, screw it. They tried to actually get me back through that by saying, well, look, you know, officially we're supposed to, because they had their own company, and they said, well, this other guy we fired because he got divorced. I was talking to my part-timer who actually knows him, and he said, no, his wife was real devil and he needed to get divorced, but they punished him for getting divorced because he wasn't good enough. And so that was a black mark. And he couldn't go back to his church to defend himself because, you know, sorry, you can't defend yourself. So they kicked him out of his own church. So they tried to get me back to get his job because it was $200 and for 30 minutes, you know. I said, no, I object to what you did to this poor man, and I don't want to do it because I have money and I want to spend time with my kids, you know. So they were pretty shocked about that.
Congratulations. That just makes me feel good.
Well, I mean, it is a business. I mean, they were waving the money in front of me, and it's just like, no, this is wrong, you know. And I objected to it because it's so much, because I've seen it. I actually went to see the priest, the American priest, to actually do one, because I had never been to a Japanese wedding before, believe it or not. And he goes in, you know, preps a little bit, maybe 10 minutes, and goes through one little quick rehearsal, and they come in from the hotel, and he does it, and then he gets paid, and he's heading off to the car, and they're heading out. And it just seems so yuck, so, I don't know,
yeah,
personal.
I'm sorry, that's, you know, I mean, you know, for me, for what organized religion is, you know, wow, great work if you can get it.
Yeah.
It would have been, I applaud your morals, because it would have been hard for me to say, well, how much? You know, nah, I'm not that shallow. I kid. Robert, it's great hearing from you. Keep those stories coming along, because it's nice to get a little bit of extra perspective.
Well, I mean, as you said, it's not just in the United States, it's just everywhere. And it's, you know, not only with the Christian, community, it's also with the Buddhists. One of my colleagues is a Buddhist priest, but he has to be because he's the first son, which is very special, and his father's a priest. And so he has to go out to the Buddhist festival days to actually go through the performances, and he was telling me how much he hates it because it's just a damn show. It's very empty, and the people are, they show up and they critique him about, oh, you didn't do that ritual quite right, or that hand movement wasn't quite right, or, and he really discussed just how much he would like to get out and how he will, but he says once he tells his father that he can't be the Buddhist priest, it's almost like a criminal act. It's that serious, and so
yeah, it's the scene from The Jazz Singer where the guy can't be a cantor, he's going to go out and sing, be a jazz singer, yeah,
exactly, right. And against the same thing, they're not evangelizing. I hate that word, but they're not trying to get the younger people into it in a meaningful way. But there is some movement there. But and so the only people in the religion is just a bunch of old people, and they're all dying out.
Well, it reminds me a little bit, Robert, of a story I saw today about one of the young women who was gunned down in Colorado a couple of days ago. Her father had said, you know, she'd been on missionary trips to here, there, and everywhere, you know, out there, as George Carlin would say, nailing lifts onto the feet of the natives, because he says, you know, religion is a lift in your shoes. And he said he would talk to her and say, come home from Egypt. There's crazy people there. You know, come home from Africa. Come home from Central America. Please come home from Asia. There's crazy people there. And she came home and got gunned down in the missionary center in Colorado.
Wow.
You know, I've said 1,000 times, and I'll say it one more, God is a God of irony.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, once I left, you know, that deacon program, it's been nothing but blessings. But the other woman that actually, Japanese, that was older, single, no children, continued, and she went on to try to be a priest, but then she ended up with lung cancer and died. So strange.
Yeah, you can't. Know. Yeah,
you would think it'd be the opposite, right? Yeah, I get the lung cancer and die because I quit. But
no. I really don't think it works that way, Robert.
No.
All right. Well, have yourself a great day. Hope your morning has started out well. I love these conversations, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Always.
All right. Take care. Bye now. Bye. Our good friend Robert calling from Kita, Kyushu, Japan. And let's see, one of these is probably a real phone caller. That one's the busy signal. That appears
to be
Bob, the person.
Hey, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up, man?
Yeah, I have to agree with a lot that Robert has to say, but I think one little tidbit he left out is that Japan was basically the last feudal society left on Earth. The reason why a lot of basically medieval culture still exists in Japan, especially the treatment of women and not knowing about sex or dating rituals or whatever, or courtship. It's because Japan was a feudal country until the 1850s, that it just got rushed into this modern technology in the space of, let's say, 150 years.
Yeah, there's some of that, I think.
Not even 150 years, because 10 years after the United States basically held a gun up to the emperor's head and said, open up your ports.
Yeah, we sailed a few battleships into Tokyo Harbor or something, didn't it? Wasn't that Commodore Perry?
Yeah. Japan just said, okay, we're going to play your game and play it just as good, if not better. So they rushed into everything Western with a vengeance. So, yes, you have this basically late 21st, 22nd century society, but a lot of the mores is still very medieval.
Yeah, and it's interesting to look at the scene as Robert painted it. you've got these people who are not taught anything about birth control, and as a consequence of that, you have tremendous rates of sexually transmitted disease, and you've got tremendous rates of unwanted pregnancy, which leads to an incredibly high abortion rate. And you know, basically that what you're talking about on the front end of all of that is the abstinence-only education of which the right wing is so insanely fond.
Well,
so you have to take a quick look at it and realize where they're going. What they are actively trying to do is win the culture war by population. In other words, they want abstinence-only education because they know that it leads to unwanted pregnancy, and then they want to criminalize abortion so that they can force the babies to be born so that they can start ruining their little minds with their dirty, nasty, filthy mythologies from the instant that the child is born.
Well, yeah, well, you know, religion counts on bodies.
Yeah, yeah.
It really does, bodies being there. The more social ills there are, the more bodies, and this is any religion, the more social ills there are, is the more bodies that they can pick from. You know, that is all part of the faith-based initiative.
It seems, I don't know, somehow I've got this sort of theme running in the back of my head, Kevin, that somebody ought to tell the religion industry to be careful what they pray for lest they get the answer to their prayers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen the movie Babel, have you ever seen it?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, this is a great movie, and what illustrates what Robert has to say is, okay, there's a segment where they have a Japanese father and daughter, and the daughter starts acting out sexually. She's like in her mid-teens, 14, 15-year-old, and she's just going around flashing, you know, men. You know, she wears the, you know, the stereotypical schoolgirl outfit with the short.
Well, Lord, look at anime. I mean,
very highly sexualized.
Sailor Moon?
You
know, and that's the extent of my knowledge of anime type stuff. And I remember, you know, clicking across, and my kids are watching it, and I'm going, Agnes, do you see that? Should they be? And she just, Bob, go to the other room. Okay, dear.
Well, also, I went to college with a lot of Japanese students, and I tell you, you should see, like.
Easy there. Don't walk into the hole there, Kevin.
No, I'm trying not to, but it's like, and this is not all of them, but I've seen some porn, and some of the stuff they have is like raunchier than some of the raunchiest porn I saw when I was in Japan. You know, it is amazing. So, you know, a lot of that stuff, but I wouldn't call Japan, the thing that I would have to disagree with Robert is that I wouldn't call Japan sexually repressive. I'll just say there's a place for it, and it's tolerated, and nothing is said.
Yeah, pretend that it isn't there, and we'll all just work from that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like the organized crime, the Yakuzas. Every town has their chapter, they advertise Yakuza. And people just go along, as long as nobody's getting shot up or anything, they could deal their vice, because it's like it literally is a business. Like, there's very little opportunistic crime in Japan. Like, you don't have to worry about someone knocking you over and robbing your pocketbook.
Right.
But, and that's why I think, you know, apparently, Japan is a crime-free society, because there is no opportunistic crime, but there is, you know, the underworld consists of selling of vices, which is prostitution, drugs, gambling.
Yeah.
And if there is any violence, it's kept amongst them, and it's policed amongst them. Kind of thing.
Yeah, well-made point. Kevin, I got news coming up. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Okay, Bob. I just wanted to put my 2 cents in.
And 2 cents well placed. Made good sense.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night. Bye now. our good friend Kevin in Brooklyn. And I found out lately we've got a couple or three listeners in Brooklyn, which is cool. Listeners in New York City. You know, I've got the little map of the United States, and I keep adding pushpins. When I take the map off the wall, it's going to look like it's been attacked by a woodpecker or something. But it always amazes me where our listenership is, and this would be a good time probably to update you and let you know, thank you very much. We haven't made it we're not at the middle of the month, but I did check in with what our fundraising is, and we've made it to $1,000. Now, that means there's only 2,500 more to be garnered in the course of this month so we can deal with the business that we have to deal with. And I thank you all very much. And if you haven't, please do. If you can't, don't worry about it. If you can, we would sincerely appreciate it. I know how hard it is this time of year. Lord, I know. Since Peter is a rerun tonight, probably in the 2 hours there when he's rerunning, I'm going to be in the basement of the house fixing a plumbing crisis. Yay, fun. We blew a hot water line last night. So, you know, well, grown-ups. 12 was a lot more fun, except for the junior high school part. So there's that. But I understand how hard it can be just to run your own household without some blithering yammerhead like myself going, you know, please can you help this thing stay on the air? But you've done a great job getting us up to about a thousand for the month. But we really do have to hit 3,500, or we're going to have real problems. There's that. Also, quick, you guys are so fast and so quick. I mentioned Yokohama Mama, and I was immediately told who that was. Then I hear again, then I get back. Yet I don't know who did that 20s favorite back in Nagasaki where the women chew tobacco and the girls go wiki wacky woo. And I am told, yes, that is a real song. You guys, you just amaze me. Coming up in the second hour of the program, a conversation about Brother Mike Huckstraby. With someone who knows about him a great deal and can lay it out without losing his mind like I do every time I try to talk about him. Eric Bullert will be joining us from Media Matters for America. I hope you'll stick around for that conversation. Listen, pay attention, because like I've said, the way the primary system is set up between Iowa, South Carolina, and New Hampshire, a lot of Republicans can be taken out of the running. Not that I'm rooting for any of them in particular, but Brother Mike Huckstraby scares the living bejesus out of me, and for a very good reason. I want to share with you a quote that I saw today over at BartCop.com. This is from a guy named Steve Dunleavy some years back, 1996. He was one of the ones who was crusading for Wayne DuMond to be released from prison so he could go and rape and murder some more. This is a quote from him, 1996. Many say that DuMond is the victim of one of the worst bone-crunching and infuriating examples of Clinton Klan justice the country has ever seen. All this, and DuMond still rotted away in prison. And Clinton, both as governor and president, ignored the facts that surrounded the case of the rape of his cousin. No kidding. And so Reverend Mike Huckstraby was part and parcel of that effort to free Wayne DuMond, the political prisoner of, what was it, bone-crunching and infuriating Clinton Klan justice. Wow. Just wow. So we'll be back. Great conversation coming up. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. Former CIA directors George Tenet and Porter Goss will testify in a congressional probe focused on the destruction of interrogation videotapes of terror suspects. The two men have become key figures in an expanding investigation into the possible cover-up of harsh interrogation techniques described by some as torture. Meanwhile, current CIA Director Michael Hayden says he had limited knowledge in the matter, but that his agency could have done a much better job in keeping Congress informed about how the tapes were handled. The first formal peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians in 7 years began today, but they began badly. The two sides traded accusations in today's session in an atmosphere described as filled with anger and tension. Rescue workers in Algiers continue to search the rubble of the bombed-out UN building. 11 people missing, feared dead, after yesterday morning's twin bombings. Latest official death toll stands at 31, but hospital sources say that more than 60 were killed in the blast. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown says that Allied forces are winning the battle against insurgents in Afghanistan. Brown also maintains that no negotiations will be held with Taliban leaders, that they will be, quote, isolated and eliminated instead. Britain will add £450 million in financial aid to troops, the same as $1 billion U.S. dollars. In southern Iraq, synchronized car bombs exploded in a Shiite market district today, killing 41 people, wounding at least 150. In Beirut, the general expected to assume command of the Lebanese army has been assassinated. A car bomb exploded near the general's home, killing 4 people. Just 1 month before the first presidential primary, a new CNN poll indicates that Barack Obama has caught up with Hillary Clinton among New Hampshire voters. Clinton is now at 31% to Obama's 30%. Today's Republican presidential debate is the last appearance for GOP hopefuls on the same stage before the Iowa caucuses on the 3rd of next month. Rivals called for deep cuts in federal spending, saying the reductions don't have to mean sacrifice for Americans who depend on government services. And entertainer Ike Turner passed away at his home in San Diego today. Ike Turner was 76 years old. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Take a break. Be right back.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
The federal budget deficit for last month jumped sharply as compared to 1 year ago, much of the increase being blamed on the calendar. Benefit payments that would have been made on December 1st were made early, before the weekend. That kept an estimated $17 billion on the November budget book. Meantime, the U.S. trade deficit increased to its highest level in 3 months as record oil prices and Chinese imports underlined a solid gain in American exports. The U.S. Commerce Department reports that the deficit for October rose to $57.8 billion. That's the highest level since July. Today, top banks worldwide announced an emergency injection of cash into short-term funding markets. Involved are the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, Bank of England, and the Swiss National Bank. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan says the subprime mortgage crisis was, quote, an accident waiting to happen, unquote. In today's Wall Street Journal, Greenspan conceded that low U.S. interest rates set during his tenure may have contributed to today's bubble in current real estate prices. Light sweet crude oil trading at $94.39 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 41 points to end at 13,473, the NASDAQ up 18 points, the S&P 500 up 9. And there's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. About 5.5 minutes past the hour, I'm Bob. And, you know, in the first hour, we got into a little discussion of Japanese culture, one in which abstinence is preached but not practiced, one in which sexually transmitted diseases are rampant, one in which abortions are higher than just about anywhere else in the world, and in which women still maintain a subservient mindset and attitude, even in the midst of what we have decided to call a 22nd century consumer culture. Much of that, the absence of contraception, ignorance about contraception, ignorance about sexually transmitted diseases, and, well, everything except the abortion part, the subservience of women, those are all things that the former Arkansas governor, Brother Mac Huckstraby, would approve of. And to discuss Brother Huckerby a little bit more with us this evening, a genuine joy always to have him on the program, a senior fellow at Media Matters for America, author, former contributing editor for Rolling Stone, Eric Bollert, joins us now. Eric, thank you very much for taking time to be with us. Appreciate the little bit of education we're going to get on Brother Huckabee.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I was looking at some of the stuff that you all have put out over at Media Matters. You've really done your homework. I got a question the other night from one of my co-hosts here on the network who said, you know, Bob, I'm a little worried about you. You're acting like this Huckabee guy is actually a real candidate. Is he? And I said, you know, there's plenty to be scared of. Am I right?
Well, real in terms of has a shot?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think the polls, you know, if you just look at the polls in the last couple of weeks, I mean, especially in terms of Republican primary, Republican campaign, where these things are usually so tightly controlled from the top down, to have someone of Huckabee's almost complete lack of fundraising, and to have almost no party establishment affiliation or backing, for to have him now, you know, pole vault to the front place in the polls, really, again, particularly for the Republican primaries, is sort of unprecedented. So yeah, I think we're in uncharted waters, but sure, I mean, you got to take him seriously, and people really need to start looking at his record, and certainly that includes the press.
Well, one of the things that I've put forward, Eric, is that he becomes particularly dangerous, and I say dangerous in a very sincere use of the word, insofar as the demographics of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina lend themselves to his candidacy insofar as what we thought was a broken down, demoralized, sort of out of the loop evangelical religion industry
right.
has suddenly appeared to be much more reinvigorated by this guy.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, once it coalesced, I mean, odds are it was going to coalesce. It almost always does around a particular candidate. And once that happened, once they weighed in and sort of made their pledge, it was going to have an enormous impact, even though you're right. You know, that movement is not what it was 6, 8, or 10 years ago. But what we seem to be seeing now is that they have sort of coalesced. And Mitt Romney thought it was going to be him, but a lot of them seem to be saying no. So they sort of have put their chips down on Huckabee, and that's why we've seen this huge spike in the polls. So, yeah, I mean, they still run that primary system. And when they pick their candidate, it took them a while, but when they pick their candidate, there's no denying the effects. Now, in terms of Iowa and South Carolina, I think you're right in terms of how that plays very strongly. It's interesting, Huckabee is not doing as well in the polls in New Hampshire, and I think most people would suggest that has less of an evangelical base. But Iowa and South Carolina and other places, they're certainly making their presence known. And again, you know, if Media Matters, we think it's now incumbent on the press to, you know, to start doing, you know, a pretty straightforward job in terms of educating people about who Mike Huckabee is.
And the press hasn't exactly been doing that job lately.
Well, it's interesting. I think the press coverage of Huckabee in the last week or 10 days has sort of been on this parallel track. One is sort of the holy cow, you know, that was certainly the sense of the Newsweek cover story. He's going to be on the cover of the New York Times Sunday Magazine this weekend. It is sort of the gee whiz, what's happening. The other track is there have been, and I think this is frankly mostly driven by the opposition campaigns, there and Matt Drudge has certainly been doing his air bombs on Huckabee and the hunches that's coming from the Romney camp. There have been these you know, sort of explosions in the press about questions about his, you know, what he had to say about quarantining AIDS patients in the 90s, what he has, you know, his involvement in getting a convicted rapist out of jail in Arkansas who then went on to murder and rape others. The fact that he didn't know that the NIE, National Intelligence Estimate on Iran, came out last week. Even a day after it came out, he still, no one had told him about it. So I think there are, it hasn't been a total free ride in the last week or 10 days. Like I said, I think it's a parallel track. There's certainly a ton of positive press and a certain amount of wonder at what's happening. But to be fair, there have been these critical looks, and again, I think a lot of it is driven by the opposition campaign, look at his past.
Does this buzz in the polls translate to money for him? Is he still broke, Eric?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't really, I guess we'll know, you know, they do quarterly reports, and we'll know, soon, I would imagine, but we'll see. It is a remarkable, two things remarkable about how little money he has and the fact that he was pole vaulted in Iowa and he hasn't been there in like a month. Up until very recently. Again, totally unprecedented in terms of how a Republican primary works. So we'll see if the money follows.
Well, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, so I've heard his shtick for a long, long time, Eric. But is this playing as something fresh and new? I've seen some articles out there that sort of say that he's getting a little bit of the Ron Paul flavored buzz because he's attacking supposedly sacred cows of right wing authoritarian republic. I'm not talking about religion, but the more socially or governmentally sacred cows of the Republican right. Is that something that is coming to the forefront as well, or is this all, do you think, driven by the religion industry voters?
I think a lot of it's driven by religion. I think a lot of it he comes across, you know, as a fairly likable guy. I think if you look at his, you know, his performance in the recent debates, you know, Romney and Giuliani and Thompson and McCain, less so McCain, but, you know, a lot of them are sort of at each other's throats. Huckabee sort of, in the previous months, sort of stayed to the side, sort of completely unnoticed. Now he's sort of above it, sort of above that fray. So I think he comes across as just a, you know, as a likable, reasonable person. And again, I think there are two tracks of the media coverage, and certainly one of those tracks certainly emphasizes that point. You know, he plays bass in a band. You know, we're seeing a lot of that, I think, sort of George Bush 1999-2000 narrative. You know, he's sort of a regular guy.
The aw shucks factor?
Yeah, it makes me very nervous when I see the press decide that candidates need to be likable and people want to have a beer with them.
That's one of those things that just goes through me like hot metal, the idea that our president should be a guy that you can get loaded with.
He doesn't apparently need to know that much. He just have to want to spend a lot of time. That standard that they concocted in the 2000 campaign was just absolutely sprang out of midair. This idea that Americans vote for someone based on their likability and based on, you know, we're gonna have this like relationship with this person for 4 or 8 years, so we want to get to know. People don't vote like that. people want a smart, capable leader in the White House.
I want a genius in White House, Eric, who can make me feel like make me feel like I've got an IQ of 2.5. You know, because that seems to be the world that we live in. On the other hand, though, at Media Matters, y'all have uncovered and exposed quite a bit of him getting a pass on a lot of stuff. You know, from the business about him raising his hand and saying he doesn't believe in evolution, and then he turns around and gets a pass when he says when they try to pin him on it, and he says, "Well, you know, I wasn't there at the creation."
Yeah, right.
And
I think Anderson Cooper later said, you know, that was sort of a brilliant response and things like that. You know, in the Wayne DuMont case, which is the one in Arkansas where he, according to his own aides who were talking with the Huffington Post recently, you know, I mean, Huckabee was actively involved in getting this guy released out of jail. He thought he had questions about the rape conviction. He thought it was handled, poorly. And he actually, you know, victims and victims' families contacted him, wrote him long letters saying, if you let this guy out, he'll kill and rape again, and in fact he did. So, Huckabee has not been, apparently particularly straightforward with that. But, you know, on MSNBC David Schuster was on saying, well, it's not gonna be like, Mike Dukakis and Willie Horton, because he's from a liberal state.
Yeah, Huckabee's a conservative guy. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not going to be that big a deal. And that's crazy. I mean, I don't know how you could make that double standard and sort of have the press come in and play defense for the guy, saying, oh, it's not going to be a big deal because he's from a conservative state. So if he helped get someone out on parole who then raped and murdered, you know, he's not responsible. That seems like a wild double standard for the press to even contemplate.
The one that really sort of made me run around the room screaming, Eric, was the comment from Chris Matthews, where he screamed into the microphone, Huckabee, because, you know, that's what Chris Matthews does, is scream. Yeah. Huckabee has got the biggest free ride from the liberal media. I guess I live in a bubble because, you know, I know there's no liberal media. You know there's no liberal media.
Right.
Lots of people with, again, IQs higher than, you know, room temperature know there's no liberal media. How does Chris Matthews get away with this stuff?
Well, Chris Matthews, who had Huckabee on not that long ago, was gushing about how everyone loves you and everyone here loves you. We want to have you back, and everyone just loves you. I mean, it was this, you know, he's got these...
Oh, I'm afraid he's going across the table on one of these guys one of these days.
I know. Whether it's Rudy or Thompson or Romney, who's got, you know, shoulders you could land a 747 on.
And Thompson smells so manly.
Right. So, I mean, if anyone's giving Huckabee a free ride up until very recent, I mean, if that was the case, you know, certainly Matthews was in on that chorus. But now he claims, you know, liberal media. I think he was getting a free ride, period. I mean, he was polling at 8%. The press just does not devote its time and resources to people in the single digit. Now, obviously, the paying.
If Dennis Kucinich, if Dennis Kucinich got the love that Mike Huckabee has got, he'd be at 35%. But you know, but he hasn't. Let me ask you a question, and this is kind of one of those journalism style things. When Pat Robertson ran for president, every time that he was referred to as the Reverend Pat Robertson.
Yeah. Right.
What happened to Mike Huckabee's reverend status? I mean, does it just get journalistically, stylistically superseded by his governor's status?
I think that's probably the main difference between him and Robertson. And Robertson, you know, was on, was known for being a televangelist. You know, honestly, Mike, you know, I didn't, you know, I'm supposed to do this for a living. I didn't realize Huckabee had been a former Baptist preacher until about a month ago. And I sort of read this stuff all the time, so I assume most Americans don't know that.
Well, that's kind of where I'm coming from, is that
yeah,
you never
I mean,
see
Americans,
him referred
when they
to.
Find out, they'll say, "Oh, that's great. That makes me even want to vote for more." Some people will find out that about him. Particularly, I think people with a libertarian streak will find that out and say, "Whoa, back up. I'm not sure I want to vote for a Baptist minister.
You know, because
I'm not sure I want to vote for any preacher."
Right.
But I think if you took a Again, the level of knowledge about him is pretty low. I mean, if you think he took a straw poll, I think maybe 2 out of 10 people would have any idea that, you know, Huckabee used to be for a living. I mean, he was a preacher.
And you know, to the best of my knowledge, and I've dug around a little bit, he hasn't mailed his certificate suitable for framing back into the Southern Baptist Convention so that he's no longer Reverend Huckabee. Is that a meme that perhaps Democrats, liberals, progressives, whatever, should work on? Is letting America know that we're talking about, you know, a preacher?
Well, I think it certainly deserves attention, not because it's any, you know, skeleton in anyone's closet, but if you're running for president of the United States and, you know, when you used to be a preacher, that certainly seems relevant. I mean, look at all the press attention that's been showered on Romney, and obviously he drew attention to it with the speech last week. But certainly religion has traditionally played a pretty significant role in presidential campaigns. If there's someone who's sort of out of the orthodox, if everyone who's running is not a white male Protestant, it comes up and people are interested in it. But if you used to be a preacher, that's important and people should want to know about it, and the press, like I said, I didn't even realize it till about a month ago. So there hasn't been a lot of attention paid to it. And yeah, certainly, you know, if he's able to sustain his current status, I assume that will be discussed and documented.
And that's my next question.
It's a very unusual background to be a leading contender for the president of the United States.
Does he have to win South Carolina and Iowa to remain viable, or can he just do second or third and be, you know, like the way Bill Clinton won, took second place in New Hampshire and was the comeback kid?
I have no idea. I mean, it is such a wide open race, particularly on the Republican side. As we've said, I mean, up until a month ago, Huckabee had almost no money, so it'll be interesting to see. We've never really seen a candidate at this high in the polls and with this little money. And so, as you mentioned before, is this going to translate into more money? And then, be right, I mean, the primary is not a three-state race. I mean, it takes a ton of money, and you got to go all over the country.
I just wonder what happens if he makes it to where he's still a viable candidate in Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, Kentucky, Mississippi. If that could give him the impetus to survive, say, Giuliani winning New York, or Romney winning New England, or, you know, whatever happens in California or Florida.
This thing could go on for quite a while.
It's decidedly interesting, Eric, because, you know, usually the Republicans have a coronation.
Oh, yeah, like I said, you know, I mean, this is very unlike Republicans. It's a top-down operation. I mean, the idea that they would ever have a wide-open brawl, I think it speaks to the weakness of the party in the last 2, 4, 6 years. The essence of campaigns have changed. Someone wrote this recently, I can't remember who, but in the years past, you know, the Republican Party would have picked Mitt Romney, would have picked Rudy Giuliani, and that essentially would have been it. I mean, John McCain tried to go around George Bush in 1999 and 2000. That was a hopeless task. There was no way, given that coronation, that he was ever going to get around that gigantic wall. But those walls aren't there anymore, and so it is much more of a wide-open race.
But it would seem that the money has picked Romney or Giuliani. I mean, Romney gives his speech last week, and there's George H.W. Bush hugging and smolicking on him like he wishes he was,
right,
that that was his son and not the one in the White House.
And they, you know, I picked up the endorsement of the National Review. But these things don't really seem to matter much anymore. And I don't know if it's because of the age of the Internet or
is there a revolt in the Republican Party, do you think? I mean, that the grassroots are in some way rebelling against the idea of having their candidate handed to them on a silver platter?
I think it is sort of a confluence of events, just because, you know, the fact that Dick Cheney is not running, I mean, it's so rare not to have a vice president step in. The fact that the party is in a weakened state that has significantly less fundraising, and you know, a condensed primary season and all those things. and you've got someone like Romney who's willing to bankroll his own campaign, and it's amazing to watch. And I don't think anyone thought a month ago that Mike Huckabee would sort of be in the driver's seat at this point.
Is Huckabee's position and his refusal, for instance, to recant on his 1992 statements about HIV/AIDS, is there anybody in the Republican Party, Eric, that matters to?
Well, I would think so. I mean, and again, this is one of the clearest examples over the press. I just don't think has done a particularly good job. I mean, someone dropped the Oppo research on drugs, and it was a 1992 video of Huckabee saying that he thought the AIDS patients should be quarantined, and his response has just been not believable, which was he's saying, it was a long time ago in 1992, there was a lot of confusion, people didn't know it, weren't really sure about AIDS, and he's off by about a decade. I think if he had said that in 1982, there would have been, much confusion.
Yeah, but by what, 1987?
1992, no one was talking about quarantine.
Yeah, and on 1987, AIDS. The CDC says it cannot be transmitted by casual contact. And apparently, what is that, 5 years, 87 to 92,
yeah.
And Huckabee's still in the dark.
I mean, his response was just not believable, but the press, for the most part, just sort of typed it up. I mean, I don't know if they're waiting for the candidates to make something out of it, but journalism says you don't really have to wait for the candidates to say something. I mean, if Huckabee, his official response is, back in 1999, people didn't know. It takes about 20 minutes to get on Google or Nexus and go back and find all the stuff on the public record, 1989, 1990, 1991, where no one in public office, almost nobody in respected public office, was talking about quarantine anyone. That's a simple task of journalism. But for the most part, they just sort of, it was a he said, both the he's happened to be Huckabee, but they didn't really show any effort to point out that His answer just doesn't add up.
Well, a moment ago you said something that I think is quite telling, and that is, and the press just types it up. There is a failure here, and it's something that you at Media Matters do a wonderful, wonderful job of pointing out, and that is the hard work of journalism. Even for what you just said, some of it's not even such hard work.
Yeah.
Is this born of fear? Is the media terrorized or intimidated by virtue of having been called a liberal media? Is that what drives them, that they're afraid that if they go out and actually do some independent journalism that somehow they'll be seen to be supporting some sort of liberal agenda? Is that what we're dealing
with
here?
Well, I think that's certainly what drove it during the Bush years, and why there was sort of that rampant timidity, particularly during the first term when Bush was riding high. I mean, I think the conservatives, particularly the lynch mob online, made it clear that they were going to, they were going to attack anyone that raised serious questions about the Bush administration. And professionally, that can be very uncomfortable, particularly when Bush is at 70 or 80 or 90% in the polls. I think with the campaign, it's interesting. I think it's much more personal. I think what we've seen is really the open contempt that a lot of campaign journalists have for Democrats. I think we've seen that particularly with the Clinton and the Edwards coverage, less so with the Obama coverage. But I think there's just they don't like them, and I think it's very personal. And the contempt is pretty clear. They treat and they write and they cover the Democrats in a sort of snarky, offensive way that they would never dream covering a McCain or a Giuliani or Thompson or.
Well, Edwards is
four,
Edwards. Yeah, John Edwards is $400 haircut, but nobody's asking about Willard Romney's well-coiffed mane.
Yeah, the Washington Post yesterday did a. As part of this front runners package, every day they're doing, four or five biographical articles on each candidate. And the Post did four, and all four mentioned John Edwards' haircuts, which I think was a blip in the news about 8 months ago.
And what was it? A couple of days ago, the New York Times ran photographs of Giuliani eating a hot dog, Obama eating a corn dog, and maybe Senator Clinton eating a slice of pizza, and the coverage was along the lines of the candidates and their food.
Right. Well, I mean, some of this stuff is, you know, some of this stuff is light, and the other problem with the campaign is, you know, the mainstream media companies have set up this machine to cover this campaign, which is, when it's over, will be the longest campaign ever. I mean, the campaign coverage really started January of this year with mostly with Clinton Obama, so it's going to be a 22-month cycle, and there's no conceivable way that enough news comes out of this campaign for 22 months in a row to sustain any kind of news operation, let alone the humongous one that now feeds off this. So, I mean, you can almost hear the grinding of the machinery as it tries to spit out, you know, enough coverage and enough content. So we get stories like the New York Times about their campaign and what they eat, and then and the Washington Post, as part of that front runner package, actually had their fashion critic write an essay about what each of the candidates wears, and then have that person divine all sorts of characteristics and character flaws based on what they wear.
But isn't that designed in part and parcel, Eric, to be a hit piece on Senator Clinton? Because a man's business suit, a navy blue suit with a rep tie and a white shirt, I don't care what the quality of the tea leaf reader is. There's right. just not a lot to be said there. But that leads you into, oh my God, she wore a salmon colored pantsuit and pearls.
But the sad part is, I mean, incredibly, I think even the worst one was the Post essay on what John Edwards wears, because sometimes he wears jeans and a black shirt, and the Post writer was able to conclude all sorts of character flaws in John Edwards. I mean, it's really, the stuff was just beyond description. And this is, you know, this is the Washington Post, supposed to be one of the most sophisticated campaign news outlets in the country. And you read the stuff and you just sort of, I mean, it makes your head hurt. And this is...
Well, you get all this fluff over Mike Huckabee, and then compare that with the coverage of Senator Clinton with regard to the so-called bomb scare of a week ago. And, you know, there was ugliness involved with some of that stuff with Senator Clinton. And to turn around and, you know, Huckabee makes a statement that, you know, he thinks that Jesus was for capital punishment because he didn't condemn his own execution while he was hanging on the cross.
Right.
To me, it seems, you know, there's nothing even handed about this. I mean, all those years that the Bernie Goldbergs of the world spent howling right. about liberal media, is that you've mentioned the snarkiness, the sort of open hostility toward the Democratic candidates. Can we finally start saying with, just sort of say it loud and say it proud, it's a conservative media bias?
Well, I'm not crazy about the word. I'm not crazy about bias, because, you know, that is what the conservatives have claimed for 40 years. And bias means it's a calculated attempt to sort of tilt the news in favor, you know, of pushing one agenda over the other. And so I try to stay away from bias, but it's much easier. I'm much more comfortable, you know, suggesting that, you know, this idea of a liberal press and a liberal bias is one of the great charades that people have been sold. And I certainly think if you look at the Beltway, particularly the campaign press, there is an open hostility towards Democrats. It erupted particularly during the Gore campaign. We saw it during 204, and it's really some of it has really just come unglued in the last month, in terms of the coverage of Democrats and how they treat them, and again, I think sort of the contempt, the open contempt that we've seen a lot of the coverage.
Where are the, I don't want you to give away any secrets or anything, but where is Media Matters going to be focusing as the campaign goes forward? Is it the horse race or individual issues, or is it something in the middle? Is there anything pressing that's really making y'all run around the room screaming right now?
just as it's, you know, we have such a simple calling, and yet it's so, the workload never ends. And it's really just calling out, you know, conservative misinformation in the mainstream press. So we see it every day, and we see the double standards that Democrats are held to. So obviously, like everyone else, we'll be paying close attention in the next month, you know, the early primary states. And then obviously in 2008, it's all going to be about the general election, and obviously we'll be watching the congressional races as well. But, you know, just trying to hold people accountable and get journalists to do, you know, the job that they should be doing and the job we know they're capable of doing, and which is, you know, sticking to the facts and putting things in proper context and not just repeating, you know, one set of talking points over the other and not holding Democrats to a different standard than Republicans. It's all pretty straightforward, but like I said, the sad part is we're at times almost overwhelmed with the amount of stuff we need to counter and knock down.
Well, Eric, I really thank you for your time this evening. You guys do a wonderful job, and Ben there, who helped us coordinate this discussion, seems to be a very, very hardworking man, and please convey my thanks to him as well. Best of luck to you, because, you know, it seems to me that given the nature of what you do, you're kind of wandering around in a swamp, and I know it's got to get tiresome at the end of the day. So, you know, our congratulations and our praise and our thanks for everything that you do. Media Matters certainly makes it a lot easier for me to do my job here.
Great, great. That's what we're here for.
All right. Take care, Eric.
Talk to you soon.
Happy holidays. Eric Bollert, Media Matters for America. If you don't go by MediaMatters.org, you should be. It's absolutely it's high on the list of things that I go to every day, just to because, you know, you feel like you got to keep yourself current, even if, you know, and even if it's not necessarily something that's going to come up, you want to feel like that you're prepared for it if in fact it does. And Media Matters, it's an amazing resource, and I have so much respect for the people who do that job, starting from the top and working down all the way to the poor little interns who sit around listening and recording Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage and Beck and the rest of the freaks. I don't know how they go home without their ears just bleeding openly. I don't know if there's still somebody on this line, but we will certainly find out. Hey, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke.
Oh, yeah, I tell you what, it's interesting you were talking to Eric about that. The one that got me this week was this past weekend was a thing. Obama claims that he's never didn't want to be president since he was a child.
Oh, I had an absolute hissy about that.
Then the Clinton campaign comes out and says, well, here's this thing showing he was doing it in kindergarten, and the media goes, Clinton campaign fighting dirty. Like, wait a minute.
Well, I was sort of a pox.
It
was a pox on both their houses, because you know what?
I know.
We've had 8 years, Luke, of a guy who said he never wanted to be president.
I know.
That's worked out nicely, hasn't it?
I know. But you know what I mean? It's just the thing right now. Obama can't do anything wrong in the media's eyes. You know what I mean? He can run over somebody and they say they were blocking his path.
Well, the question, though, becomes I've seen a couple of stories, Luke, that say that it's a dead heat in Iowa, and it's a dead heat in New Hampshire. If Obama pulls ahead, will the shift suddenly be on? Will it move to him? Is it all for the so-called mainstream media? Is it all about hatcheting whoever happens to be on top?
It's about hatcheting Clinton, even not just who being on top.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. If Obama moves into any kind of a lead, will it shift or will? I mean, I guess the question I'm asking is, if Senator Clinton slid all the way to the bottom, would all the focus still be on stomping on her?
On certain people like Matthews? Oh, God, yes. I mean, that's his bread and butter now. You know what I mean? If you turn it on, whatever the subject is, if it's a subject on Mitt Romney, by golly, by the time he's 2 minutes into it, it's Hillary's fault.
Sure. Well, everything is.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, any subject he brings up, you know, if we want to talk about the CIA tapes, by the time he gets to the end of it, somehow Bill and Hillary Clinton are involved.
Eventually, the Wayne Dumont story will be Bill Clinton's fault.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've already tried that, because apparently one of his victims when he was originally convicted, was like a third cousin of Bill's.
Yeah, the bone-crunching Clinton Klan. Yeah, I had the quote from Bart Kopp earlier, and it's just disgusting.
And like the thing was, when this happened, he was already out of the governorship. This was under Jim Guy Tucker. So you can't say, Bill Clinton went after him. No, Jim Guy Tucker went after him.
Well, but you know how the right wing is. They say, well, Bill Clinton picked up the phone and said, bust him.
But you know what? Maybe,
take him to the MENA airport. Oh, God.
It's this whole thing with the media. One of the others that got to me was this thing. Now, before I get to that one, did you see the McLaughlin group this week?
No, I didn't. And
Lawrence O'Donnell had a meltdown.
Oh, really?
Oh, he went after. He does not like Mormonism.
Really?
Oh yes. If you go like the Crooks and Liars or probably. Maybe something at Media Matters. They may have some tapes. You need to take a look at it. Like I say, you begin to wonder if they're going to go to commercial and come up with the dart guns.
Wow. Yeah.
He went off on it. But where was it? Hang on a second. Oh, well, you see this thing lately. What they did with all this stuff was on the DeMond thing. Well, of course, one or two of them have already linked it back now. It's double standard because you have to remember the Catherine Wiley story. And you're sitting there going, I still just want one of them to explain to me why when she's on the TV show, she claims she was raped, but every time she's been under oath, she says she wasn't. Now, somebody explain that to me.
Yeah, let's check out the Lawrence O'Donnell meltdown. I've got it here, so I think it'll load in a second, and we can let folks hear what you're talking about. Because, I did... Yeah, here we go. I got this. I got a warning about this earlier today.
On Big Love, the HBO series that has been a real headache for Romney, here's the problem. He dare not discuss his religion. And he fools people like Pat Buchanan, who should know better. This was the worst speech, the worst political speech of my lifetime. Because this man stood there and said to you, this is the faith of my fathers. And you and none of these commentators who like this speech realize that the faith of his father is a racist faith. As of 1978, it was an officially racist faith. And for political convenience, in 1978, it switched. And it said, okay, black people can be in this church. If he believes the faith of his fathers, that black people are black. Because in heaven they turned away from God. In this demented Scientology-like
he's not making that part
of what
up.
Was going on in heaven before
well,
the creation of the earth.
Mormonism disqualifies him from being president.
I'm saying
States.
He's got to answer. When he was 30 years old and he firmly believed in the faith of his father that black people are inferior, when did he change his mind? Did the religion have to tell him to change his mind? And when he talks about the faith of his father, how about the faith of his great-grandfather who had five wives.
Well, look, my great-grandfather had slaves. And I don't believe in slavery.
And his religion is based on the work of a lying, fraudulent criminal named Joseph Smith, who was
What's
a racist, who was pro-slavery.
My point is, this guy said his beliefs. He is living by the precepts of his faith. This is a good man. He is a courageous man in what he has said.
His religion believed in slavery.
I know it. But look.
Wait a minute. Courageous, Luke? Dude bicycled around France while people were dying in Vietnam, but never... Wait.
Let Pat in.
Every religion has had its scandals, and I don't think we hold everybody who follows a religion responsible for all of the negative
you do
things
when
that
he says,
went
I
on.
Believe every word of it. He was offered an opportunity to distance himself from the evils of his religion,
not,
and he didn't.
I am not comfortable with dissing an entire religion. I prefer the approach that we are a pluralistic country, and this religion should not disqualify him.
John, wait a minute. Are you talking about the Inquisition and the Catholic Church? Are you making reference to that when you say we all have our skeletons in the closet?
If you want to bring that up, you can bring up more reasons.
This is precious.
Well, look, I agree with Pat when he starts to say I think it's an unfair assault on Mitt Romney. He was explaining he is holding the tenets of his faith very dear to his heart. I don't think it's.
This is so much BS, though, Luke, because in that whole stupid speech, he
never explained it.
He never said it. No.
I mean, the thing got to me was I wrote my letter to the Washington Post and all that thing, and I said, it was for Kurtz's mailbag thing, and I said, why didn't all the reporters go look at the, you know, at the Kennedy speech in 1960? Kennedy explained. You know, he explained how his Catholic religion would not affect him. You know, he went into some of his religion. Mitt Romney mentioned the word Mormon once in that speech.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the whole thing for Kennedy going to Houston was to go into the devil's den and deal with it.
He faced it. Romney essentially said, if you aren't a person of religion, I don't want you. I mean, that's essentially what he said was, you know, secular people, agnostics, atheists, get out. You don't count as far as I care.
Yeah.
You listen to that speech. Because according to that speech, all people he has anything to do with are people of faith. And last time I checked, the Constitution gives us the freedom from religion and of religion.
Yeah, but see, that from religion part, Luke, they don't want anything to do with.
That's what I mean.
Because you got, well, you know, I guess it's all just the 1969 Mets, and you got to believe. You know what I mean?
And we see where the Mets are. The one that got to me, though, on the press this week, though, is all this thing about the CIA tape.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it amazing how every one of them, the first thing they assume is that George Bush didn't know about the tapes? How do we know that? If Harriet Myers knew, you bet she went in and told George, told Dick. I mean, that woman couldn't keep, you know, she worships at the altar of George Bush.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So I don't see, you know, I don't see her saying, well, I can't tell the president about this.
You know, but where the NIE is concerned, there's another one out there that's just a beauty. From Fraud Thompson, your former senator Luke, talking about the NIE and talking about, you know, U.S. intelligence. Have you run across this? He shows up on Glenn Beck's program.
Oh God.
Yeah. Okay. Well, have a snort of whatever's handy and get ready because here it comes.
They simply look at the world differently. They're undoubtedly intent upon nuclear weapons. I don't care what this latest NIE says. That's foolishness that represents our own inability to get a handle on it more than anything else.
You got that?
Well,
the NIE, comprised of 16 separate intelligence agencies, coming together and saying Iran is not working on a nuclear bomb, haven't been working on a nuclear bomb since 2003, and leads no indication to think that they're planning on restarting the program anytime soon. Fraud Thompson has declared that. You know, I don't know if he got a message from God or a script writer or what, but you know, I don't care what this latest NIE says. That's foolishness.
Well, the thing that got to me on that is, isn't it amazing how MoveOn.org was absolutely ripped over the coals for just asking, would General Petraeus, a part of the government, you know, tell the truth? Now, isn't it amazing now that Fred Thompson and the mustache with anger management, John Bolton,
yeah,
that they've essentially said, you know, for the last couple of days, have called all 16 of those agencies every name in the book. Where are people saying they're un-American?
Well, you know, we're kind of tied up in Congress right now. I mean, we probably can't get a resolution on Fraud Thompson and John Bolton anytime soon, because we're busy.
The way the press is reacting, you know, I mean, the press is absolutely ripping MoveOn every which way.
Yeah, but the press is busy right now, Luke. They're dealing with a bill regarding the importance of Christmas and the Christian faith.
Oh God, is Bill O'Reilly on the warpath again?
Let's see, what was it? H. Res. 847 passed today, I believe. The yeas were 372. The nays were 9. Sponsored by Representative Peter King, who had previously voted against similar resolutions regarding Diwala and Ramadan.
Oh.
Yeah, but there he is. Sponsored, and you know, how do you vote against it? Yeah. You know, wow, you know, God, I don't know who the 9 brave souls were who stood up against this piece of stupidity. Yeah, I want my money back, Luke. I don't know about you, but I want every blessed representative who wasted so much as 1 second of their time representing us on this stupid, stupid, stupid resolution to mail a check back home.
Well, I tell you what, you know, it's just amazing what they don't tell us. You know, I mean, it would fill a couple of computer banks. The one I got to recently was this thing about Baghdad. You know, they're like, well, Baghdad's really you know, really calm down. And you said,
boom.
You noticed, have you noticed, though, that no one bothers mentioning that whole neighborhoods have been totally ethnically cleansed? That they're saying, well, people are moving back. Well, some of these people are going to find out they can't come home because they're the wrong religion.
No, they ain't going back to 72 Primrose Lane. Uh-uh.
Because that's now Shiite area, and you're a Sunni, so get the hell out.
Right.
If you try to move in, we'll just kill you.
But, you know, again, you know, all quiet on the Baghdad front, and what do we got in the last 2 days? Boom, 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 boom.
All the little smaller cities around.
And Baghdad, too. I mean, yeah, sure. Nice little occupation we've got going there.
Well, it interesting now that, like I say, finally the new British Prime Minister has finally said, you know, they're pulling out. They're not pulling out, but they're switching over to training only. But they're going to stop sending their people out on missions.
And the British are going to turn security for Basra over to the Basrans.
Yeah, and that with Mr. Drum down in Australia, that I'm sure he's already working on how to get their people out.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the big things on his. You know, isn't it amazing how you virtually saw, you see nothing in the national news about that?
No.
That one of the three.
Well, there's only so many column inches in any given paper, and there's a lot. You know, we got to devote a lot of time to what the candidates eat on the campaign trail, after all.
I know. You know, it's like, well, let's see. The British Prime Minister who supported Bush, his party lost. He lost his own seat, but oops, we can't talk about that in national.
But that's okay. He's got a new job. Did you see this?
No.
Yeah, Tony Blair has a new job. He has appeared in a new film with Barney and Miss Beasley.
Ooh.
Because Barney and Miss Beasley have become junior forest rangers, and Tony Blair makes a guest shot to congratulate them. You know, they're Scots Terriers. And he says, as someone who was born in Edinburgh, I always like to see Scots moving up in the world.
Oh, joy.
How pathetic. How utterly, undeniably pathetic. Does poor Tony Blair even understand what contempt millions and millions and millions of Americans hold him in? I guess not, because when you've got so little left of your own self-respect that the best you can do is to show up in a White House puff piece video with the dogs.
Dog.
You know, how many comedians are there? I mean, starving comedians. How many starving actors are there out there who would crawl across ground glass for a one-line speaking role in any given movie, but they've got one caveat in their deal with their agent? I don't work with kids, and I don't work with animals. And there's Tony Blair working with the dogs.
Well, that's how far he's fallen.
Yeah. Hey, Luke, I got one more blinking here, and I want to hit before the news. Good to hear from you. Thanks for going around with us.
All righty.
Bye now.
I'll see you. Bye.
It's always fun. Luke keeps his thumb on the pulse beat of the media, and he does a damn fine job of it, too. That's the cool thing about this program. You know, there's Glenn Beck talking to Fraud Thompson. Screw Fraud Thompson. I don't want to talk to Fraud Thompson. I don't want to talk to most politicians. I want to talk to you, because you are as smart as they are. We'd like to have a genius president who's a lot smarter than any of us, but that's not happened in a while. And it's not, well, I mean, Bill Clinton was smarter than most of us. There's no doubt about that. But not for 8 years, and the people, no. Let's see if there's somebody still here. Yeah, looks like a real person. Hey, welcome to the program.
First of all, as the daughter of, as the granddaughter of a Mormon elder, it makes my religion a gas.
Yeah, he's rolling. You understand.
Yeah. Although, actually, it was my grandmother who was the really religious one, and she's rolling. She was also, you know, the guy that was going off.
Yeah, Lawrence O'Donnell.
Played the, you know, the guy that had the meltdown.
Yeah.
He was right. You want to talk about racist? You gods, you can believe it.
He is right. 1978 is when the church declared that people with dark skin are fully human.
Yeah. Before that time, and I know this for a fact because, like I said, it's in the family. Massively racist. My grandmother was one of the most racist people I ever knew. Nice lady, that she didn't have that problem. The thing that bothered me most about Willard's speech is his cowardice.
Yeah, and it was cowardly. There's no bravery in going to Texas and talking religion.
Well, not only that, but his cowardice in refusing to admit more than once he was Mormon. He couldn't bring himself to say more than once he was a Mormon.
He couldn't do that, and he also couldn't bring himself to say, my church has made errors in the past.
Yeah.
Because they'd take away his underwear.
Even the Catholic Church has admitted. Even the Catholic Church admitted they were wrong.
Well, that's so true, and I was reminded of that today by our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at Finnerman Works. He's gotten into it by an apologist for the Inquisition. I'm not kidding. I'll share that in the third hour. But yeah, Pope John Paul II actually apologized for the Inquisition.
Uh-huh. That's not the reason I called.
No.
The reason I called is I'm so ticked I can't see straight.
The Christmas resolution?
No.
Dennis
Kucinich has been...
Oh, barred from Iowa? Yeah, because he didn't rent a storefront and have an Iowa campaign headquarters. Yeah. Saw that one coming, because they barred him from the last one in Iowa, too. So, you know, what that means is that nobody in Iowa, unless John Edwards brings it up, will hear about the immorality of the war. They certainly won't hear in Iowa from the only guy, the only person who has been right about it all along, who's been right about health care, right about so-called free trade, right about everything that's wrong in this country. They're just not going to hear from him.
Yeah, I was on the phone today not only to the DNC, but also to the Des Moines Register, and I had a question for them. Just what in the world are you people afraid of?
Yeah, well, but they'd say, well, you know, he's not a
rhetorical question.
He's not a serious candidate.
I know what they're afraid of. They're afraid of the truth.
Yeah. They're afraid of getting of people actually. But, you know, meanwhile, you've got a guy who polls numbers similar to what Dennis Kucinich does, who has been pole vaulted. I think it was that was the phrase that Eric Bollert used. Pole vaulted as the darling of the media in Iowa.
Yeah.
In the form of Reverend Huxterby. And by God, just like we call Romney Willard, because it's actually his damn name, Reverend Huckabee.
And I'm Reverend Huckabee. It should be used all the time, Reverend.
Former Arkansas, actually the full New York Times style manual reference should be, not that they're following their own references anymore, their own style book anymore, the full reference should be former Arkansas Governor Reverend Mike Huckabee.
Yeah. And I don't know about anybody else, but I do not want to live in a country that is governed by a preacher.
Or as Mark Twain referred to them, a gospel sharp.
Oh, I love that. Especially not one that's as crazy as he is.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. No, no, no. I don't blame you, and I don't take any issue with you.
Yeah, I wouldn't want any religious person, you know, any religious practitioner in that office. I don't care what denomination.
You mean you wouldn't even support a Wiccan?
Wiccans don't do that.
Well, okay, but, I mean, if somebody was running and said, you know, hey, I am, and here we go, and blah, 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 blah. Would that...
Okay, what I'm saying is you can have your own private religion, but you cannot be a minister, a priest.
Well, you know, that's in line with an early Massachusetts statute, Susan. I certainly don't know the citation on it or anything, but after Massachusetts got itself free from religious domination by the Puritans... One of the first things they did was pass a law that says if you're a priest, if you're a preacher, if you hold any sort of office in the church, you are thereby disqualified from holding public office.
I think that's eminently sensible, because Massachusetts had a real gruesome example of what happens when you mix the two. It was called Salem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to get even more gruesome, go back to Spain.
I know. I know.
And the Inquisition.
Well, you're absolutely right. And
I think that would be a perfect bar if you are a minister of any denomination. I don't care. Practice your own religion, fine. But you cannot be a minister or a priest or anything like that. Do not hold office.
See, you're out there persecuting the Christians again.
No, I'm also persecuting Buddhists. I'm also persecuting, you name it, Zoroastrians. I don't care.
Now, see, once you get the Zoroastrians pissed off at you, you're just done. You realize that.
What?
Once you get the Zoroastrians mad at you, you're just done. That's worse than getting the Scientologists pissed at you. Because the Zoroastrians play with fire. Susan, it's top of the hour, but thanks so much. I appreciate it. I got a thing from Eugene Finnerman coming in the third hour, and I've also got some audio. You were talking about Lawrence O'Donnell melting down. Wait till you hear this audio. This will blow you away.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's and you can check in because it's a history of the Mormon Church.
Cool. May his noodly goodness pay attention to you.
Ramen. Bye, Ramen Susan.
To you. Bye-bye.
Pastafari and well wishes. So here we are, another hour gone. We'll go to the news. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. Need all the help we can get. PayPal button, or there's a snail mail address on the website, too. Jump on it. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush vetoed the bill that would have expanded government-provided health insurance for children. Mr. Bush also vetoed an earlier similar bill because he said both pieces of legislation had fundamental flaws, including acceptance of adults into the program. The president urged Congress to extend the program at its current funding level before leaving for holiday break. Former CIA directors George Tenet and Porter Goss will both testify in a congressional probe focused on destruction of interrogation videotapes of terror suspects. The two men have become key figures in an expanding investigation into the possible cover-up of harsh interrogation techniques described by some as torture. Meantime, current CIA director Michael Hayden says he had limited knowledge in the matter, but that his agency could have done a much better job in keeping Congress informed about how the tapes were handled. The first formal peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians in 7 years began today, but reportedly did not go well. The two sides traded barbs and accusations in today's 90-minute session in an atmosphere described as filled with anger and tension. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown says that Allied forces are winning the battle against insurgents in Afghanistan. Brown maintains that no negotiations will be held with Taliban leaders, that they will be isolated and eliminated instead. Britain will add £450 million in financial aid to troops, the same as $1 billion U.S. dollars. In southern Iraq, synchronized car bombs exploded in a Shiite market district, killing 41 people and wounding at least 150. A Bosnian Serb general has been sentenced by the Hague Tribunal to 33 years in prison for his role in the siege of Sarajevo during the Bosnian War. Thousands of civilians were killed in the siege, the longest in modern military history. Today's Republican presidential debate is the last appearance for GOP hopefuls on the same stage before the Iowa caucuses on the 3rd of next month. And just 1 month before the first presidential primary, a new CNN poll indicates that Barack Obama has caught up with Hillary Clinton among New Hampshire voters. Clinton is now at 31% to Obama's 30%. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a break. Be back with business news right after this.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Sleet, snow, and rain have blanketed the Midwestern states. Ice storms have killed at least 24 people. Power slowly being restored to an estimated 1 million homes and businesses. In the Caribbean, tropical storm Olga headed for Cuba now. Olga made landfall late last night, dumping heavy rain across parts of Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legend Ike Turner passed away at his San Diego home today. Turner was 76 years old. In business, the federal budget deficit for last month jumped sharply as compared to 1 year ago, much of the increase being blamed on the calendar. The U.S. trade deficit increased to its highest level in 3 months as record oil prices and Chinese imports underlined a solid gain in American exports. Shares of General Electric rose higher today as investors placed their trust in the company's promise to trim its consumer financial services division. GE shares increased 49 cents to $37.52 on expectations that its 2008 profits would show a rise of at least 10%. Light sweet crude oil trading at $94.39 a barrel, gold at $818.80 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 41 points at 13,473, NASDAQ up 18, the S&P 500 up 9. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
As promised, I wanted to share with you something from the Internet's most brilliant satirist and ironicist. Ooh, I invented a word. I get a toaster. Namely, Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony. If you are not signed up for the email alerts, why aren't you? You don't get this kind of witticism and this kind of, actually, as it turns out, trenchant analysis very many other places. God knows you don't get it at the Borowitz Report, please. But in a piece entitled "The Pain in Spain Falls Mainly on the Plane." Turn your monitors off, Bob. "The Pain in Spain Falls Mainly on the Profane." Eugene writes, "I have a new reason to be paranoid." Oh, good, Eugene, because we know you're always looking for those. In a discussion of the Reformation on the Jeopardy website, and Eugene does go and discuss things on the Jeopardy website because Eugene's a former mega champion of Jeopardy. Yeah, you didn't know that, did you? Or have I mentioned it? Well, I should mention it more often. But on the Jeopardy website, he says, "I may have said something unkind about the Inquisition." And this really does dovetail into what we were talking about earlier. "Judging from an indignant reaction from one correspondent, I discovered that the Holy Office," that would be the Inquisition, "has its admirers. In a belligerent tone, he condemned my amazing ignorance," that's in quotes, amazing ignorance. "I had to take his condemnation on faith, since he forgot to provide all his evidence of the Inquisition's benevolence. In fact, his medieval nostalgia was quite surprising. The Torquemada fan club is out of fashion these days." Pope John Paul II actually apologized for the Inquisition. Most modern Catholic scholars and reference books tend to be vague and evasive on the subject. For instance, out of morbid curiosity, I once looked up the Inquisition in the Catholic Encyclopedia. The entire article was one quarter of a page long. The first paragraph gave the definition and etymology of the word Inquisition, the process of asking questions, from the Latin. Toward the end of this article, there was a one-sentence concession to history, quote, "In Spain, the Inquisition was excessive." Well, it's like butter has fat in it, isn't it? By contrast, the Encyclopedia Britannica's article on the Inquisition was four pages in length. The Encyclopedia Judaica, on the other hand, thought the topic worth six pages. Evidently, the more victimized you were, the more interesting the subject. Unfortunately, says Eugene, my antagonist on the Jeopardy board is a medieval relic. Since he identified himself, I had no difficulty looking him up. He was not so curious about me, otherwise he would not have tried intimidating me with the fact that he was once on Jeopardy. See, what did I tell you? His education certainly had a dogmatic consistency, a Catholic prep school, followed by a bachelor's degree from Holy Cross, a master's in theology from Loyola, and a law degree from Seton Hall. And his current employment could indicate how much he admires the Inquisition. He's an assistant attorney general, a Bush appointee, of course. Well, says Eugene, see you in Guantanamo. No, that song's Guantanamera, not Guantanamo. Okay, sorry. I have so many trains of thought going sometimes that they just leak out. Now, I mentioned something to Susan in our conversation that I want to run for you. I found this. It was sent to me. And you really have to hear this. And what this is, it comes from Alternet. I love Alternet. It's another one of those that's on the list. Let's see. Bart Kopp, WD40.com, Alternet, Media Matters, Think Progress, the Buzzflash, Common Dreams. But anyway, you get the idea. I just gave away the entire recipe for my show. Well, damn. Comes from Alternet, and it's titled "The Cartoon Mitt Romney Doesn't Want You to See." You know, you really don't need the cartoon part. The animation's not that good. But the voiceover is where it's at for me. I wondered, come on, they're making this up. They got to be making this up. They're not making this up. Maybe if we could get somebody at the New York Times to watch this. Because should there be a religious test to hold office? No. And what that constitutional provision means, it means that you don't have to prove that you're a good Protestant or a good Catholic or a good anything, and you also don't have to prove that you're not one. But, by the same token, while there is no official religious test, the silly junk that one is willing to believe, let's put it this way. A decision on whether or not to launch nuclear weapons should not be based upon your faith. Faith is what lets you sleep through the night. You know, John Lennon, whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. But it should not be a basis of foreign policy. We've seen that in action now, haven't we? We've watched as the Bush administration has sort of actively neglected the Middle East to the point that, you know, it's ready to boil over. All in the name of bringing back Jesus. Mother. So, without further ado, check out this audio, and feel free to scream. You can even pick up the phone and scream after it's done, and you can scream to me, and we'll scream together. Okay? Here we go.
Mormonism teaches that trillions of planets scattered throughout the cosmos are ruled by countless gods who once were human like us. They say that long ago on one of these planets, to an unidentified god and one of his goddess wives, a spirit child named Elohim was conceived. This spirit child was later born to human parents who gave him a physical body. Through obedience to Mormon teaching and death and resurrection, he proved himself worthy and was elevated to godhood as his father before him. Mormons believe that Elohim is their heavenly father and that he lives with his many goddess wives on a planet near a mysterious star called Korah. Here, the god of Mormonism and his wives, through endless celestial sex, produced billions of spirit children. To decide their destiny, the head of the Mormon gods called a great heavenly council meeting. Both of Elohim's eldest sons were there, Lucifer and his brother Jesus.
Huh? His brother?
A plan was presented to build planet Earth, where the spirit children would be sent to take on mortal bodies and learn good from evil. Lucifer stood and made his bid for becoming savior of this new world. Wanting the glory for himself, he planned to force everyone to become gods. Opposing the idea, the Mormon Jesus suggested giving man his freedom of choice, as on other planets. The vote that followed approved the proposal of the Mormon Jesus, who would become savior of the planet Earth. Enraged, Lucifer cunningly convinced one-third of the spirits destined for Earth to fight with him in revolt. Thus, Lucifer became the devil and his followers the demons. Sent to this world, they would forever be denied bodies of flesh and bone. Those who remained neutral in the battle were cursed to be born with black skin. This is the Mormon explanation for the Negro race. The spirits that fought most valiantly against Lucifer would be born into Mormon families on planet Earth. These would be the lighter-skinned people, or white and delightsome, as the Book of Mormon describes them. Early Mormon prophets taught that Elohim and one of his goddess wives came to Earth as Adam and Eve to start the human race. Thousands of years later, Elohim, in human form once again, journeyed to Earth from the starbase Koloth, this time to have sex with the Virgin Mary, in order to provide Jesus with a physical body. Mormon apostle Orson Pratt taught that after Jesus Christ grew to manhood, he took at least three wives, Mary, Martha, and Mary Magdalene. Through these wives, the Mormon Jesus, for whom Joseph Smith claimed direct descent, supposedly fathered a number of children before he was crucified. According to the Book of Mormon, after his resurrection, Jesus came to the Americas to preach to the Indians, who the Mormons believe are really Israelites.
Told you.
Thus, the Jesus of Mormonism established his church in the Americas as he had in Palestine.
Those are Indians whacking the early Mormons. Ow!
By the year 421 A.D., the dark-skinned Indian Israelites, known as Lamanites, had destroyed all of the white Nephites in a number of great battles. The Nephites' records were supposedly written on golden plates and buried by Moroni, the last living Nephite in the hill Cumorah. 1,400 years later, a young treasure seeker named Joseph Smith, who was known for his tall tales, claimed to have uncovered these same gold plates near his home in upstate New York. He is now honored by Mormons as a prophet, because he claimed to have had visions from the spirit world in which he was commanded to organize the Mormon church, because all Christian creeds were an abomination. It was Joseph Smith who originated most of these peculiar doctrines which millions today believe to be true. By maintaining a rigid code of financial and moral requirements and through performing secret temple rituals for themselves and the dead, the Latter-day Saints hoped to prove their worthiness and thus become gods. The Mormons teach that everyone must stand at the final judgment before Joseph Smith, the Mormon Jesus, and Elohim. Those Mormons who were sealed in the eternal marriage ceremony expect to become polygamous gods in the celestial kingdom, rule over other planets, and spawn new families throughout eternity.
Hey, Ma, I got me a planet.
The Mormons thank God for Joseph Smith, who claimed that he had done more for us than any other man, including Jesus Christ. The Mormons believe that he died as a martyr, shed his blood for us, so that we too may become gods.
Space.
All right. Had enough. You ever, I mean, it's one ripoff after another. And yeah, that cartoon's gotten over 500,000 views on YouTube. You gotta think, I mean, you know, and people talk about the Masons? Space, that's the beginning of Superman. Wow. I mean, does a tall tale teller, is that what they, a treasure seeker named Joseph Smith? And nobody, see, this is what I keep talking about with these incredibly serious, authoritarian, humorless people. He named the big angel Moron. Duh. But you've also got to understand when this arose. This is during a time in America that is frequently referred to as the Great Awakening, which is properly referred to as the Great Dumbing Down, when religion grabbed hold of America, the generation that had given us the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and our independence from Great Britain had passed away, and people started out onto the frontier, and like I've said about my own forebears, you know, two, three generations in, and bang, we're illiterate, because you're too busy trying to stay alive. So people were, sort of primed for this kind of hokum. And this is, it is hokum, okay? And it's part of an, and it's not just that hokum, it's part of an entire era of hokum. I could take you 3 miles up the road from where I'm broadcasting right now and show you a hilltop farm made of, delineated with beautiful, beautiful, stone fences. Stone walls. No, they weren't put there by the aliens. They were put there by a spiritualist sect who was coming through this region and had themselves a seance on the way, and the table started knocking and banging around on the floor of the wagon, and, you know, that was God, and they were like a sect of Seventh-day Adventurers or something. And they stopped and settled right there because that's what the card table said to do. For really. Another, you know, there were numerous attempts, whether you know this or not, prove the Joseph Smith wasn't the only one doing the ancient Jew hustle on the American Indian. Those of you in Ohio are familiar, I'm sure, with the Serpent Mound and the entire complex there. There was a move afoot to declare them lost Jews. Same thing with the people who built Cahokia and all the various and sundry temple mounds now credited to the Mississippian culture all over the southeastern United States. Secret Jews. Long lost Jews. And the spiritualism and the table knocking and the stuff that the only thing is, there was a gang of gullible people in upstate New York that were willing to buy into this because I guess their lives were so desperate and miserable, what's the official phrase? Nasty, brutish, and short, that the idea that when you die, you don't just go to heaven and play a harp or something. No, you turn into a god. And there you have it. But you see, can you imagine Willard Romney standing there at Texas A&M telling the assembled faithful, And my faith, the faith of my fathers, says that when I die, I'm going to be God. I'm going to get me a planet. Maybe several of them. And me and my God wives are going to just populate it. We're going to be real busy, if you know what I mean. Wow. Now, personally, I don't care who believes this or if they believe this, but what bugs the hell out of me is the prospect that a guy might be president of the United States who would think that I need to believe this. See, I remember being told by Southern Baptist cultists that I have thought my way out of religion. I have thought my way out of salvation. My mind has taken away the salvation of my soul. Holy Jesus. It's not true. If you ascribe to God, God gave me the mind that I have doped this foolishness out with. God gave me the mind that allowed me to realize that the Inquisition was evil. He also gave me the mind that with which I was able to discern that the Mormon slaughter of white settlers and Native Americans in Utah was manifestly evil. You ask Mitt Romney about that? I don't have a position on that, but, you know, that was a long time ago. Huh? I mean, it's like asking Reverend Mike Huckstermey about capital punishment, and his answer is, well, Jesus didn't say anything about it while they were executing him, so I guess capital punishment's cool. We live in a country that's desperately in need of a very, very intelligent person at the helm of the so-called ship of state. Willard Romney ain't him, neither is Reverend Huckstermey. While I'm at it, let's remember that neither is Rudy Giuliani, and neither is John McCain, and neither are any of the other little freaks who are running for the Republican nomination. I have my doubts about some of the Democrats, but I also know that any one of them is a million, billion, jillion, kajillion, trillion, blue billion better times better than any of these Republican freaks. And they are, oh glory, they are freaks. Heh! So, you know, there you have it. I don't know, maybe you're going to go out and join up and get your magic underwear because you're going to get to be God when you die. Woo! No, thank you, Lottie. You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Mormon zone. Good God. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend David from Maine is on the line with us. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Welcome. And on another note, I only have two questions on the lighter side of things.
Okay, question one.
Who did the voiceover? And
I don't know, but wasn't he good?
I know, but he sounds familiar.
I think it was Alexander Scorby.
Was it?
Didn't that sound like Alexander Scorby?
The name is not ringing a bell. But two, how the hell did they get the cutting room outtakes of the Lost in Space score from John Williams? That's amazing. That's amazing. Anyways, what I call today is to add some humor into the mix.
Okie doke.
It's one of those you can't believe it moments, but it's true. Jesus General has got in the conversation with this guy named Major James Lindsay, and it goes like this. I'm having a very strange email conversation with Major James Lindsay and someone named Oliver White, both of whom are copying their emails to a John Flammer at a U.S. Army email address. Apparently, they believe my post about a radio appearance in which Major Lindsay discussed the threats Mexicans, communists, Chinese Democrats, and Satan, Prince of Darkness, posed to the United States were inaccurate, but are unable or unwilling to point out the alleged inaccuracies. Major Lindsay writes, Dear sir, I am writing to ask you to respectfully remove my photo from your blog and all references to me ASAP. And then, Jesus General writes back, Dear Major Lindsay, thank you so much for emailing me. It's truly an honor to receive a communique from an esteemed lawyer like yourself.
I must admit, however, that I'm a little confused about your request that I write a note to whom it may concern, stating that your blog did not reflect me. I'm guessing that you are referring to my April 4th, 2005 post titled, An Army's Major War Against Democrats, Chi-Coms, Mexicans, and Satan. If so, I don't understand why you would think it does not reflect your views. After all, as the recording attached below, and he does attach the recording below, verifies, you did appear on The Edge with Daniel Odd Radio Show and made what seemed to be an attempt to recruit volunteers to join the Minutemen, stated that the Chinese military was preparing the Mexican army for an invasion of the United States, revealed that the CIA is holding Chinese soldiers who were captured while smuggling a dirty bomb across our southern border, and seemingly declared that the Democratic Party, the Communist Party USA, and Satan, the Prince of Darkness, are working together to destroy this nation. If you think I've misunderstood any of your statements, please elaborate, and I'll be glad to revise my post. I can't see anything else in the post to which you might object. Although I am unclear about your current military status, you
were. I love Jesus General. The guy is brilliant. He's up there with the Rude Pundit. You ever read the Rude Pundit?
Yeah.
Just gorgeous stuff. So these guys. Let me see if I understand the thrust of this. Jesus General skewered some freak.
Yeah.
And the freak is trying to get off the pin. Is that what we're saying here?
Yeah. In closing, he says, that's why I'm going to ask you to do something to prove your bona fides and any further correspondence you might send. Can you name the Yankees opening day batting order from last year? No. Scratch that. Satan is a huge Yankees fan. Okay, tell me what Bill Buckner will always be remembered for doing. Heterosexually yours, General G.J.
The Bill Buckner reference. That's just cold.
The P.S. is classic. P.S., I'm guessing you're a Ron Paul supporter, am I right? And then Jim Lindsay answers back, please call me. And then he says, what do you need? And then they continue to communicate on and on. And then
what's the address? Is that jesusgeneral.blogspot?
Patriotboy.blogspot.com.
Patriotboy.blogspot.com. Great, great stuff. But, and the out cue always, heterosexually yours, Jesus General.
Do we have any sound bites from Alan Keyes from the debate of today?
Sadly, no.
No sound bites from Alan Keyes.
No, you know what? I ran audio from the last Republican debate.
Yeah.
And I caught hell for it, so I've just decided to stay away from it.
I could have sworn he was holding a Havana in his hand while he was talking. It might have been a Havana Cuban shaped pen, but I was like, is he holding a cigar? Did they just make this guy crazy on purpose? Do they give him drugs beforehand?
Oh, I don't think they have to. It dropped on his head at birth.
I don't know. It's the Republican National Committee, you know?
Yeah.
There's always something going on. And then the other thing I was going to mention was, is Kucinich going to move forward with the impeachment thing, the 50-page document?
God, I hope he does.
It's getting about that time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I had the, I've got the story right here from last night's stack. Well, it's an electronic stack. I'm trying to be kind to the earth. But 54, is it 54-page? Impeachment document aimed squarely at Dear Leader. And he said he was going forward with it, so I have no reason to doubt him.
You might want to get a staffer to call, maybe interview him and ask the specifics of what he wants to give some update to the people of what's going on. I think that would kind of help things a little bit for people, a little bit more clarity for people, since it doesn't seem to be, no one's talking about it in the news.
Well, the quote from his remarks in Nevada, David, yeah. On the way over here, I was reading a 50-page document that relates to articles of impeachment for the President of the United States, and I want you to know that I'm actually preparing this document for submission to the House. This is a moment when we're called upon to reclaim our country. You give me your vote, I'll give you back your country. Think about this. The government has an engine of sustainability so that the Department of Transportation focuses on developing mass transit solutions. The Department of Housing and Urban Development develops green housing with natural light and passive solar. The Department of Energy incentivizes the production of wind and solar and green energy. The most appealing thing about him, this is according to one person who went to the speech, the most appealing thing about him is that he's not connected with special interests, international corporations, and he does not accept campaign contributions from corporations or PACs. He's not connected to the military-industrial complex, oil companies, and health insurance companies that rule our lives.
You know, I hope the best for it, and I hope we get some kind of update in the soon, just to see kind of reaction, to see what, exactly what happened. But I did want to mention one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading, I think I found this curious and interesting. I was reading a Time magazine in an office. I was reading the back page, and it was this writer who worked for Sports Illustrated, and he was talking, he was kind of gushing about how President Bush wrote him a letter. But one of the things I found really curious and interesting was the fact that President Bush had actually remembered the meeting that they had, and he said, "And I don't want you to track mud all over the place like you did last time." And that struck me as ding, 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 ding. That was 5 years ago. How many people has... Now, what people are saying about President Bush being totally dubious and losing his mind and all of that, you remember something like that 5 years ago. And there is the rumor, Bob. And a lot of people have said it. There is the rumor that he has an amazing ability for memory. And that right there just feels...
Well, he probably... I wouldn't be surprised that he does, David. But it's the same way when he talks about killing or war or despoiling another country or creating madness and mayhem around the world, he doesn't stutter. He doesn't stammer. He speaks straightforwardly with real conviction. It's only when he starts trying to talk like a human being that he... it's like they see down in Texas and maybe in Tennessee too. That's when you get that crap. He probably does have an amazing memory, but his amazing memory, David, is for grudges. Now, I mean, it's not fair to pick on her because she's not in here. But you know, when Agnes and I have a dispute, we'll be disputing about topic A, and before I know it, she's on to topic Z prime. Okay. And that's when I look at her and I said, "Honey, that's not fair. You've gone into the grudge closet." And I make this noise where I go, like a closet opening. It's the same thing. George Bush is one big grudge closet. So if somebody did bring in mud, he'll remember it because, that's the way he was raised. He was never praised, and the only thing that was ever mentioned to him was the stuff he got wrong. From the moment that hateful old beast Barbara started potty training him at gunpoint, bad boy, bad dirty undies, bad, bad, bad George. That has an impact on the way a human being goes toward adulthood. He remembers slights. He remembers insults. His run for the presidency was nothing but a vendetta against Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton gave his father a stomping.
I guess what I'm mentioning is not that, Bob, necessarily, because, again, I've read Kitty Kelly's book partially, and, again, they say that George and articles with Ron Suskind, too, they say that he has an amazing ability for memory, not grudges, Bob. All details concerning...
Yeah, well, what is a grudge but a detailed memory?
No, I mean, it's not just grudges is what I'm saying. It's detailed of meetings and remembrances of people, faces, places, that kind of thing. And a lot of people comment on it. So what I'm saying is when he plays that game of not having a conversation or anything like that, this guy has an amazing ability to account for information in his head. And that's partly the reason why he's so high on the charismatic scale, because he can just pull that out.
And that's also a trick of politics.
Yeah.
If you can't remember people from one time to the next, you're done. So he was raised in that atmosphere, and the memory can be trained. I dispute the idea that it's any indication of manifest intelligence. It's a trick. I mean,
No, what I'm saying is his charismatic intelligence is up there.
Yeah,
you can see videos of him back from like the early 90s, 95, 96, and out. It'll show you exactly like how on it he was in terms of just talking to anyone.
Okay, yeah, but I think he has gone downhill.
There's no doubt about that. And that's all I got for tonight.
All right, well, thanks, David. Good to talk to you, and I hope we'll hear from you soon, all right?
All right, later.
Take it easy. Bye now. Who was it? Was it Bill Bradley or one of the former New York, had this whole improving your memory thing? Memories can be helped. You know, one of the ways apparently you stave off Alzheimer's is by doing the New York Times crossword puzzle every day. Some people do it in ink. George Bush does it in crayon. Yeah, whatever. I'm told by an emailer, in heaven, not only will Willard Romney be a god, he'll have some petrified wood to go with godhood. Oh, my. Try the veal. So we wander on along through some other stories that bear at least mentioning. The background on this stupid HRES 847. Steve King, a Republican from Iowa, introduced HR 847, recognizing the, quote, importance of Christmas and the Christian faith. I imagine Peter Godbold is probably already asleep given the long days he's been having, but I know that would just make him just beat his head into a wall. We need a congressional resolution recognizing the importance of Christmas and the Christian faith. A spokesman for Congressman King said the bill was introduced in response to previous resolutions recognizing the Muslim celebration of Ramadan and the Hindu Diwali. He modeled his resolution on the Ramadan resolution, according to a spokesman for his office. There's only one problem. King didn't vote in favor of the Ramadan resolution. He was part of a handful of weirdo right-wing lawmakers like Virgil Goode from Virginia and, of course, the draft dodger Tom Tancredo of Colorado. Yes, he was a draft dodger. He went from 1A to 1Y based on his assertion that he was mentally ill. Mm-hmm. Yep. He did. They all voted present on the Diwali and Ramadan, or on the Ramadan resolution, because they were in a pickle. They didn't want to vote no because they didn't want to be seen as not commending religion in general. Whew! But, of course, on the other hand, I'm sure he voted yes. Well, I mean, look at the numbers. Poor ELO in the chat room, our moderator, is just bouncing off the walls, bless her heart. And if you've got a... Why isn't everyone? The damn thing passed 372-9. What the... The entire country is coming down around our damned ears, and the House is spending time voting on a resolution that says... Well, never mind what it says. Never mind. Just never freaking mind. This is what we get. This is what we get out of our Congress. Any lawyers in the audience? Hmm? Well, I know of one because he's a host on the network. Mark Levine. Any members of the American Bar Association? Time to mail in your membership card from your wallet, the certificate suitable for framing, and the Johnny Jr. lawyer decoder ring. Why? Because the American Bar Association has tacitly admitted today that it is ethically dead. How do I know? The American Bar Association has named as its Lawyer of the Year... Jesus, this hurts even to say it. The American Bar Association has named as its Lawyer of the Year Alberto Gonzalez. One of these days, I'm going to read one of these things, and I'm just going to start power swearing. I mean, I'm going to be hit with Tourette's that probably won't let up. Negative news coverage may have cost former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez his job, but it won him an honor Wednesday from a magazine published by the American Bar Association, Lawyer of the Year. The ABA Journal named Gonzalez's successor, Michael Mukasey, as its top lawyer for 2008, mostly in anticipation of how often he'll be in the media spotlight for trying to, quote-unquote, repair the beleaguered Justice Department. Really, if you're a member of the American Bar Association, how can and you've got a more you've got anything approaching lawyer ethics? Because you see, Alberto Gonzalez should have been disbarred by now. He should not be allowed to practice law ever anywhere. But if you're a member of the American Bar Association today, and knowing this information, you remain a member of the American Bar Association tomorrow. Why? What's wrong? What's right with being part of an organization that names Alberto Gonzalez Lawyer of the Year? Yeah, I know. Time Magazine named Hitler Man of the Year in 1933 or 34 or 36 or whatever, because he was present in the news so much. The ABA is supposed to be a bastion of lawyers who... Well, never. Screw it. Screw the ABA. Screw Alberto Gonzalez. To heck with the bunch of them. Alberto Gonzalez, Lawyer of the Year? It boggles the mind. Then there was the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing titled The Legal Rights of Guantanamo Detainees, in which Brigadier General Thomas W. Hartman, yeah, kind of wrong Tom Hartman, okay, not that Tom Hartman. This is a guy with a bunch of jewelry on his little costume. Brigadier General Thomas W. Hartman, the legal advisor at Guantanamo Bay, repeatedly refused to call the hypothetical... Wait a minute. Whoa. Okay, we're not talking about waterboarding people at Guantanamo. He was given a hypothetical question by... Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And he was asked in this hypothetical question if the Iranian military waterboarded a downed American pilot. Now, never mind that it's the Iranian military. You know, why couldn't we say if a another country did it. But no, because there's still, you know, never mind the NIE, we've still got to gin up a war against Iran. These people, war criminals. Lindsey Graham asked him, though, if Iran, if their military waterboarded a downed American pilot, whether that would be torture. Check it out.
In this country is waterboarding. General Hartman, do you believe waterboarding violates the Geneva Convention?
I was asked that earlier, Senator. And with regard to this entire issue, we start with the following premise. Torture is illegal in the United States.
We have a downed airman in Iran. We get a report that the Iranian government is involved in the exercise of waterboarding that downed airman on the theory they want to know when the next military operation may occur. What would be the response of, what should be the response of uniform legal community regarding the activity of the Iranian government?
I'm not equipped to answer that question, Senator.
You are.
I will tell you the answer to the question that you asked in the beginning, Senator. And that
you mean you're not equipped to give a legal opinion as to whether or not Iranian military waterboarding, secret security agents waterboarding down airmen is a violation of the Geneva Convention?
I am not prepared to answer that question, Senator.
Thank you. I have no further question.
Wow. Now, bear in mind, there was to be some other congressional testimony that didn't happen. This was yesterday, day before yesterday. Air Force Colonel Morris Davis resigned from his position as the chief prosecutor for the military commissions at Guantanamo Bay after he was placed under the command of torture advocate William Haynes. Yesterday morning, during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, Senator Dianne Feinstein revealed that the Pentagon had blocked Davis from testifying before the committee. Wow, this is like a movie I've seen before. Oh, wait a minute. Sure, yeah, that's right. It is, because it was not that long back that we were talking about Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Couch, another former Guantanamo prosecutor who was blocked by the Pentagon from testifying about so-called enhanced interrogation techniques. Wow. Just wow. You know, I could scream. I could foment. I could fulminate. What's the point? This is the America we live in. You know, Dianne Feinstein was announcing it, but she was part of making it happen. So that makes it, I mean, sure. You know, how sickening is that? The Pentagon will not, tells Congress who can and cannot testify before it. And Congress just said, well, thank you, sir. May I have another? And they just take it. They just take it. No big deal. Just take it. Let them say again and again and again, no, you can't hear testimony about that. I mean, you're only the Congress. Jesus, we're the Pentagon. Who the hell do you think you are? Legislative branch, sit down and shut up or we'll shoot you. We've got all the guns. Listen, I'm done. That kind of stuff just makes me sick. Yeah, it wasn't Bill Bradley that did the memory gig. That was Jerry Lucas. Yeah, I knew it, but I knew it was a member of that New York Knicks squad. And it wasn't Alexander Scorby, but, you know, hey, I tried. So that's it for tonight. Peter Godbold's Strictly Confidential is a best of. as the saying goes. I'll be back with the horn section at roughly 11 p.m. Eastern time. Hope you'll tune in. We're getting, I was talking with Ben Birch the other day, and we're getting an archive of the horn section set up, so you'll be able to access those as well. Followed by John Fox with All Foxed Up at midnight Eastern time. Stick around. There's lots more fun programming on the way. Thanks, everybody, for joining this evening. Thanks, everybody, who has contributed to keeping the horn going. You have no idea how moved I am to know that what happens here on the horn is important to you. It affects me and humbles me in ways that it is difficult to describe. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you like what happens here, if what happens here matters to you, then WhiteRoseSociety.org matters to you. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
the Quality News Network. President Bush vetoed the second consecutive bill that would have expanded government-provided health insurance for children. An earlier similar bill was also vetoed because Mr. Bush said both pieces of legislation had fundamental flaws, including the acceptance of adults into the program. Another veto may be in the offing for an upcoming energy bill, as Senate Democrats refuse to remove language that slashes tax breaks for big oil and gas companies. The bill passed the House last weekend, expected to pass the Senate on Thursday. President Bush maintains that the legislation unfairly targets the oil industry. Current CIA Director Michael Hayden says he had limited knowledge in a congressional probe focused on the destruction of interrogation videotapes of terror suspects, but that his agency could have done a much better job in keeping Congress informed about how the tapes were handled. The first formal peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians reportedly did not go well today. In the first formal peace negotiations in 7 years, accusations and insults flew in today's session. In Beirut, the general expected to assume command of the Lebanese army has been assassinated. A car bomb exploded near the general's home, killing 4 people. Just 1 month before the first presidential primary, a new CNN poll indicates that Barack Obama has caught up with Hillary Clinton among New Hampshire voters. Clinton is now at 31% to Obama's 30%. Today's Republican presidential debate is the last appearance for GOP hopefuls on the same stage before the Iowa caucuses. That'll be on the 3rd of next month. Rivals called for deep cuts in federal spending, saying the reductions don't have to mean sacrifice for Americans who depend on government services. The International Olympic Committee officially stripped 5 medals from U.S. runner Marion Jones today. She admitted using performance-enhancing drugs during the Sydney Games. Sleet, snow, and rain have blanketed the Midwestern states. Ice storms have killed at least 24 people. Power slowly being restored to an estimated 1 million homes and businesses. Astronomers say the best meteor shower of the year will be visible in the night sky tonight and tomorrow. You might want to look for that. And Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legend Ike Turner passed away at his San Diego home today. He was 76 years old. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a break. Be right back.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The federal budget deficit for last month jumped sharply as compared to 1 year ago, much of the increase being blamed on the calendar.